author of Screenwise, Devorah Heitner, interior designer, Libby Langdon, and Supper Club editor, Kevin Pang. And now, here's your host, a man who wants to bring back the Macarena, Justin Kaufman.
What can I say? I love uniformed line dances, right? I mean, who doesn't? Bring it back. Bring back the Millie while you're at it. It's probably all that ill society would be fixed by a line dance, by a uniformed dance craze that swept the country, swept the globe. I think we would see a lot of the problems that we have in our society disappear, at least for a day or two, where we're all like, dun, 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 dun. Left arm, right arm, kick, back, turn around, down. Like something like that, if we could do that, I feel like we wouldn't need to hire any more police officers, have any press conferences, get the Department of Justice involved. We would just dance. Hello, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on The Download with you till 11 o'clock tonight here on 720 WGN. Exciting show. I'm very excited about tonight. We got some great guests as well as some great topics tonight. Kevin Pang's going to join us, longtime Chicago Tribune food writer who left the paper. He has landed. The Pang has landed. He is now the editor over at Supper Club, the new AV Club food blog. So we're going to talk with him about that transition coming up here in the 7 o'clock hour. Also tonight, my guest at the big table is author Devorah Heitner. She's the founder of Raising Digital Natives. She's also the author of Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. It's so fascinating. Monitor or mentor? Are you a tech-positive parent? 312-981-7200. Everything in here is so interesting because it's a ton about, you know, not just the obvious when it comes to the digital world around your children. You know, there's some stuff on safety and privacy and all the things, you know, limiting screen time so they don't turn into Minecraft zombies. But it really is just about as kids grow and are part of this digital world, you know, what you have to do as a parent and as a family to make sure that they are not only protected, but that they evolve and they become sort of good digital citizens. And that's what we're going to talk about coming up at the big table. Also tonight, Libby Langdon is here. Libby Langdon, a longtime interior designer. You can see her on the Today Show. She's all over. I mean, she's written pretty much for every interior design magazine that's out there. She's been on all the daytime talk shows. She's in Chicago for the Merchandise Mart show. There's a casual interior design show that's right here. There's so many interior design shows that happen at the Merchandise Mart right here in Chicago. She's here, and she's coming over tonight to talk about not only her career, but just about interior design and what to do with your space. You know, she wrote a book about, you know, sort of small space solutions. She's based in New York City. You know, when you have an apartment that's essentially the size of a broom closet, you got to hang some drapes. And change, you know, maybe take that one folding chair and turn it to the left. Hang some drapes. It's all about staying happy. So that's coming up tonight as well. And tonight, and I'm so excited about this, but this is the final night for Picnic, where we've been giving authentic, legitimate nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs. How about it? All summer long, we've been giving nicknames to all the players that we know and love on this 2016 team that is eventually going to win the World Series. Tonight, we finish it out with the star of the team, and I don't care what anybody says, the former Cy Young Award winner is the star of this team, Jake Arrieta. We need a nickname for Jake Arrieta, and it can't be JR or, hey, Tuh, what's up, Tuh? That doesn't work. So Matt Klein will be here. Obviously, Rob. I guess Baddish is going to be in as a judge. Is he in tonight? Or is Esmeralda back?
I think Esmeralda's back. I think so, yeah.
Oh, perfect timing for the end of Picnic. She is the judge. She will judge the nicknames that you call in and text with. It's been great. And, of course, we'll give prizes to the winner. So that's all coming up tonight here in The Download. We got a great show. I can't wait. I'm so excited to get started. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier, Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, it's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Let's kick the show off like we kick it off every night with the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Mayor Emanuel and Superintendent Eddie Johnson announced that the city will be hiring 700-plus officers. It's hard to argue with adding more police officers to the streets of Chicago at a time when shootings and crime are so high, unless you are Black Lives Matters, who denounced the move as militarizing communities instead of addressing poverty, unemployment, and the lack of social services. Okay, fine, there's that. But adding extra police officers should be separate, right? I think it's good for our community. It also shows support for the police, just as long as they don't all get assigned to Michigan Avenue. The Disney store will be just fine with the three officers already there. A big article in the Tribune called out Chicago's lead pipe problem. I guess most cities are digging up the toxic pipes when they're working on routine maintenance. But Chicago, nope. We're ignoring the problem for now. Maybe we're waiting for Magneto from X-Men to come in the city and just raise all the pipes at once. That'd be pretty dope, right? And not real. So come up with a plan. We're waiting. Don King introduced Donald Trump in a church in Cleveland today in an effort to persuade Black voters to consider Trump. King used a story about Michael Jackson and inadvertently dropped the N-word. Then he asked Trump to undress to his skivvies for the weigh-in, because even he was confused on why he was there. The Federal Reserve today held rates steady. Yay! Or wait, nay. I can never tell what's good or bad with this story. I don't know what to do. What am I supposed to do? I'll just go, meh. Former Bulls star Derrick Rose is set to go to court next week for a civil case surrounding an alleged rape. The woman who is accusing Rose and friends will have to identify herself. So far, Rose's accuser has been anonymous. So score one for Rose. And the foul? The Chicago Archdiocese waited a week before reporting a child porn allegation against a priest, which on the surface is abominable, right? But I say it's progress. If this were 30 years ago, they'd just pretend it never happened. So a week? That's like instant. Wow. Look at you. Cook County's getting back in the tax game with a proposed tax on, let me guess, cigarettes? No. Booze? No. Strip clubs? No. Soda. Ding, 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 ding. God, politicians love the soda tax. I mean, for once, tax something else. Come on. You know, I'll give you an idea. Tax salsa. You want salsa verde, the green kind? 25 cents more. Boom. Just solved the education crisis. Thank you. You're welcome. Speaking of education, strike voting started today for Chicago teachers. Hey, if you vote, do you get a sticker? It says, hey, I voted for a strike. You don't get a sticker? That's lame. It's bogus. In weather, rainy today. Hate rain in September and October. Usually mean weather is right afterwards. But tomorrow, it's supposed to get to 88 degrees. It's upside down world, man. Wait, isn't today the first day of fall, September 21st? When's the first day of fall? I thought it was the 21st, right? I feel like they changed it at some point. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like I was taught September and May, right? Is it May or June? Oh, man. I don't know anything. What's up? What's down? What's right? What's wrong? Dogs and cats, blue and purple. I don't know anymore. In sports, the Cubs will try to make it a clean sweep at Wrigley over the Reds tonight. The magic number for the overall number one seed is at 3, thanks to another Nationals loss last night. So by the weekend, yeah, we'll be number one. The Cubs have big country John Lackey going tonight. Still a question about how the playoff rotation is going to play out with Arrieta, Lester, and Hendricks having good years. Will Lackey have a spot when the Cubs go deep in the playoffs? Can we count on old wooden teeth for an out in the seventh inning? We'll see. The Sox have Chris Sale going in Philly tonight. Maybe worth watching since his last outing was a complete game. Also, do you notice that Chris Sale routinely pitches past 100 pitches? Usually closer to like 120. When Sale's arm falls off, are we going to remember that little stat? It seems like a Bumgarner or an Arrieta or a Kershaw, they don't throw that many pitches. 100 and they're gone. So why does Sale, especially on a losing team? When asked for comment, manager Robin Ventura was like, huh, sorry, I was napping. In hockey, USA team is done for the World Hockey Tournament after losing to Team Canada last night, and that means Patrick Kane. I have a few days off. Feel bad for Taves, though, who has to continue to play. Hawks kick off training camp this weekend. Jay Cutler's been ruled out for 2 to 3 weeks with a thumb injury, so the team officially turns to Brian Hoyer to beat the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. Hoyer played for the Houston Texans last year, so maybe he knows something about Texas that'll give him an advantage. I don't know, like what to eat or what not to eat before a game or something about the weather or pre-game wardrobe.
Where do you get the best 10-gallon hat? I don't know. I just don't know. Something's got to be there. Some advantage has to be there. The power rankings are out today, and the sports sites have the Bears at the bottom, or dead last, or right before the Cleveland Browns. Ugh. Bravo. Bravo, Bears. And finally tonight, a new study ranks the top 20 drunkest towns in America. And surprisingly, no towns from Illinois. Unsurprisingly, 12 from Wisconsin. What? I mean, I know being a Packer fan is mentally exhausting, but 12 out of 20? Those are like Hall of Fame numbers there, Big Red. Congratulations. That's the carry out for September 21st, 2016. Hey, you like pumpkin spice on your pizza? Who doesn't?
Coming up, Kevin Pang's going to join us, former Chicago Tribune food writer, now holding it down over at the AV Club's news section, the Supper Club. We'll talk with Kevin. And coming up at the big table, Devorah Heitner with her new book, Screenwise, helping kids thrive and survive in their digital world. That's coming up. Stay with us. All right, Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
Oh, man, teachers voting to strike, Mayor Emanuel hiring new cops, Anthony Weiner. This is like a newsman's buffet tonight.
Chris Sale's already given up 6 runs
I see that.
4 innings.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good.
He has to choose now. I'm in the fantasy baseball championships. You know, I have Chris Sale on my team. He chooses now
to
put that kind of effort forward.
Yeah.
Don't make me get all OB up in here.
Well, you talked about his pitch count. Maybe he was just saying, you know what, enough is enough.
I think that has something to do with it, though, right? I mean, the idea that you pitch 120, 125 pitches, and next time out, you aren't so good.
Well, he's got, you know, he's got things to do. Origami, cutting things up. I mean, he's a busy guy.
I may just, I'm that kind of spiteful owner when it comes to fantasy baseball that I may just drop him, even though it's, you know, he's done for the season for me.
Well, you've had quite a few issues with your fantasy baseball this year. You've got the guy who does the last minute thing that you talked about. I mean, it's crazy, man.
That's on him. Yeah, but I want to send a message to the rest of the guys on my team. It's championship week, and we can't have games like this. It's not tolerated. Chris Sale, he gone.
Wonder if they get like updates on their smartphone. Justin just dropped.
Justin just dropped
you. Done.
I don't even care if you're still coming out for the fifth inning. Dropped. Pack your bag. Your bag should be packed in the dugout.
It's crazy.
You're going to play for the Hulas.
Yeah,
the White else is in my league.
You know, my White Sox have been very disappointing this season.
They have, man.
It's crazy.
All right. Welcome back to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, Alert Security is back in the building. Kevin Pang is here, the longtime food writer for the Chicago Tribune who left the job last year. Kept himself busy, though. He had a James Beard nomination for his documentary he did with Curtis Duffy on Curtis Duffy. He has found a new job. He is editing the new Supper Club section for the Onion AV Club. Kevin Pang, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
It's good to see you, Justin. You know, the last time I was here, I should say, I've been in this building. I was here for 11 years.
Yeah.
And then I've been here twice in the last 12 months.
both times
it's been with you.
That's funny. They're like, why does he keep bringing that Pang back?
I love it. With you, I'll make an exception to be back.
Thank
you.
All right, so let's talk about this. I mean, the Supper Club, there's a big announcement earlier this week, last week, just about the idea of the Onion and the AV Club getting back into food. They've dabbled at times, but this is really like establishing a national vertical. What attracted you to this job?
Sure. So, you know, the AV Club, which is the non-satirical pop cultural sister site of the Onion. We don't make any satire up.
Right, it's not fake.
So we've done a lot of food coverage, but it's always been the Taco Bell has some awful new quesarito, and let's try it, and let's tell how awful it is, right? That sort of thing.
Right.
And so we just wanted to do, I don't want to say more of that, but we wanted to take food and treat it with as much respect and as sort of as much kind of geeky approach as we do to film and television and music. So they asked me to come on board a couple of months ago, and so I joined Onion Incorporated, and it's really been great. And so we just launched, as you said, our new food site called Supper Club. And the whole idea is that we wanted to do food coverage, but not just high food, not just low food, but also food through the prism of pop culture, through movies, music.
I was going to say, how do you separate yourself from the verticals like The Eater and other places that have been able to cover food as almost as a news source?
Absolutely. So we look at those sites like Eater.com and Lucky Peach and Thrillist, and they all do a great job. And I've got lots of friends who work there, and I admire what they do. So we basically looked and see what they're doing and ask ourselves what is not really happening. And so, and how can we write about those things and maybe do some videos about it? So I'll just give you an example. One of the videos that we did was how to hack into a fortune cookie. So it's not exactly like, you know, food porn, right? You're not looking at a nice piece of ribeye being sliced open, you know, not seeing like the pink center. And I love those sorts of like food porny video. So the idea of how to hack into a fortune cookie is how can you remove the fortune from inside the cookie and replace it with something else without breaking the cookie. So I know the secret hack of how to do that. And, of course, if you go to avclub.com/food, you can find out yourself. And so on top of that, we also had we have this PDF full of 50 fake fortunes that my colleagues at the Clickhole and at The Onion wrote for us. And so they're funny and silly. And so that's what we meant by approaching food in a different way.
Yeah. And I was going to say, I mean, this is AV Club's national. This is no longer just Chicago. You wrote for the Tribune food section for years, and it was a Chicago-based experience. But mm-hmm. this is a national experience, so it would be almost impossible to only write about restaurant openings and new dishes when you've got restaurants all around the country.
And, you know, part of the reason why I guess I left my old job, and it was a really great job, was because I was eating out so often. And, you know, when you're writing for a publication like the Tribune.
Oh, boo-hoo.
Well, you know, so that's the thing. And I'm always aware when I tell that to people, people are like, shut up.
I did that for all the people who are listening right now. Are like, oh, I'd love to be out right now.
Okay, but ramen right let me now. Say this, though. If you're eating out, let's say, four nights a week, and you're not just eating one or two dishes, you're ordering like half the menu, and you have to eat every single one. Man. It's great like once or twice, but when you're doing this for 7 years in a row, it becomes a little bit, you know, precarious for your health, right? So that was one of the reasons having not needing to write about burger lists or writing about pizza or having to try six fried chicken restaurants in one day, which I had to do like 8 years ago. And that was one of the most horrible days of my life, right? And able to write about food, you know, in essay form, you know, as pop culture. That was really interesting to me because there's just so much that you can write about.
Yeah,
you can write about movies and write about the role of food in science fiction, which is one of the stories we got coming up. So it's kind of exciting.
You've been an award-winning writer in a way that you've always found yourself circulating around food, around the culinary industry. And even when you weren't writing, you were doing documentaries about the culinary industry. What is it about food and about the industry and about the restaurant experience and also just about the pop culture surrounding it that keeps you here? Because you're a great writer. You can go write about something else.
Well, you know, I actually was very wary about writing about food again. In fact, when I left the Tribune, I thought I'm not going to write about food again just because there's really not a lot of jobs out there where you're writing about food. But, you know, when you think about it, food is pop culture. Food is it's the great unifier, right? And it's something that obviously we all eat, but it's not just about the act of eating. It's not just about how things taste. You know, food has literally started wars. It has ended wars. It has brought people together. It has brought families together. So you can approach food in so many different ways, which is not just about the act of eating. So the idea that you can approach food and not just write about how it tastes, and just write about, you know, the cultural significance and what it means personally to me and what it means to, you know, to cultures 5,000 miles away and how it feels so different, but when in fact there's a lot of similarities. That interests me about the aspect of food writing.
Covering the pop culture aspect of it, there's a lot that goes on, everything from the advertising that we see between football games to, you know, to as you said, like finding hacks to deal with our food issues like fortune cookies. But, you know, I also think that there's a place, and you already start this with even commentary or at least write-ups about some of the food issues or issues surrounding food. Like last week we heard about the sugar lobby 50 years ago, blaming it on fat, and it's always, we all thought it was fat, but sugar might be the problem. I mean, from your days at the Tribune and being a journalist, that helps you because you can be able to put some commentary into or assign some commentary to people about real issues around food.
Absolutely. And so I think it's having that context and coming from a news background, I think that's really been helpful in able to look at food and not just as a lifestyle. Because, you know, a lot of new food writers who are coming onto the scene and writing about food, they're coming from it as perhaps it's you know, they're lifelong cooks, or, you know, they enjoy the going out and the hospitality part of it, or the restaurant part of it. And really, if you think about it, that part of food is might encapsulate 10% of, you know, everything that is under the umbrella of food, right? There is food science, there's food politics, there is food as culture, there's food as travel. I mean, it's not just, you know, the thing I keep coming back to, it's that food is not always about how things taste. It's really about the relationship between people, between cultures, how it affects us from a political perspective, from a scientific perspective. Yeah. And so it's really such a broad umbrella, and I think that's part of the reason why I got sucked back into the food game.
You're talking to Kevin Pang. He's the new editor of Supper Club, the site, the food site for the AV Club. So it's avclub.com/food.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Kevin, of course, a longtime Chicago food writer here in Chicago. I'm fascinated because, you know, a lot has going to have to come from just scouring the web. You know, the stories that come out and being able to talk over.
Sure.
How does it help you, or how does it hurt you that you're here in Chicago? You're not worldwide. You're here in Chicago. Is there an advantage being in the Midwest?
Absolutely. I think it's an advantage. I think one thing that we're really proud to be, I mean, even the word Supper Club conjures up some sort of
Door upper County.
Exactly. Upper Midwestern Wisconsin aspect of it. You know, like when you think of Supper Club, I think of huge plates of roast beef and like low balls of brandy old fashions and like Oompa bands and, you know, things like that, right? And so, you know, a lot of food coverage comes are based in New York, and that's just where the media center is, and that's fine. But I think that being in Chicago, you know, one thing I really want to push for is to have this Midwestern. We're very proudly Midwestern. We want that to reflect in our story. So I'm really sort of virulently anti-snark. Like, I don't like those stories where it's like, you know, we ate these so you don't have to. You know, that to me sounds so judgmental, right?
Right, right.
So, like, to me, I think what we should be doing
is sans Taco Bell, anything from Taco Bell.
Well, I'm not going to judge about Taco Bell, right? But I mean, I think the point is that we should be celebrating food. You know, let's write about our food obsessions. And let's just write about, for example, we just had a story about the Filet-O-Fish sandwich. So one of our writers, he is a vegetarian, but he won't eat any meat except for the Filet-O-Fish sandwich, right? And he talks about why he loves it so much. And so I shouldn't be looking at the commenters, but, you know, I just decided to look and see what people were saying about the story. And I thought people were going to be saying, like, oh, you're just like a corporate shill for McDonald's.
No.
But then they said, you know, most of the comments were, you know what, I freaking love the Filet-O-Fish sandwich. It's so simple. You know, it's not the most culinarily, gastronomically advanced or sophisticated food. It's just kind of fish that's not really flavorful. It's got a piece of cheese. The bun's really soft. But together, it's kind of alchemy. It's really, really good. So, you know, I like the idea of really not being judgmental about food and not just being so, I guess, elitist about what we eat. And so I think that's where the Chicago part of having a home base in Chicago, that's where that comes out.
Kevin Pang, of course, a longtime Chicago Tribune writer. He's also now the editor of the Supper Club, the new site for the AV Club. You can find it at avclub.com/food. Kevin, great to see you. We'll be reading, and we hope to have you back.
I'll be back in Tribune Tower in 6 months, hopefully.
I once did a sketch in a show a long time ago. It was sort of a playoff of the What Would Jesus Do? And that was the concept. The concept was, guys, in a situation like this, it was two people who were arguing over a parking spot. And guys, in a situation like this, you got to ask yourself, what would Jesus do? And then Jesus comes out, oh. But then it's quickly interrupted by car noises and things like, what are all these moving pedestrians? The green light, the red light. Which I think was used again, like used by Family Guy or something after the fact.
Oh.
There's always been a couple times it's just low-hanging fruit. It's not the easy. It's not like, oh, we stayed up for 14 continuous nights working on the What Would Jesus Do bit. No, it's low-hanging fruit. There's always that time when other sketch shows like a Saturday Night Live or a Family Guy or any of those shows do something that's in your stage show that you're always like, eh.
Like, how did it get there? Is it just similar minds, or did somebody that you worked with that moved to LA told came up with the idea?
We need an idea. We need a bid from you, stat writer. And they're like, I have nothing. I guess I'll steal Justin's idea. Give me a break. But see, if they were smart, if you were an aspiring comedy writer, you'd listen to WGN Radio, Rokan, Justin Kaufman, Patty Vasquez, Nick DiGiulio. All with performance background. Steve Cochran, of course. Bill and Wendy. Wendy's great. Bill's hilarious. But the point being that, like, I feel like you could just steal bits out of the ether that are done all day on AM talk radio and be able to craft a script off it. I mean, it was just last week where I was like, don't steal. We had a good bit. I can't remember what it was, but it's like, I think I said, don't steal it. It's ours. Something in the carryout. But like tonight, I want to tax salsa. Instead of taxing soda, they should tax salsa. So not only comedy writers, but I think politicians should be able to listen and take ideas. The red salsa, fine. That's free. Green salsa,
extra.
25 cents. Put a tax on it. Don't even get me started with queso. Try to take that out of the jewel of Dominic's. Dominic's gone now, of course. That or the Whole Foods got that special gluten-free queso. 50 cents extra. I'm telling you, man, pensions, education, all that stuff funded. The Kaufman way. Kaufman for mayor.
I like it.
Kaufman for Cook County Board president, right? I mean, I'd have a tax on salsa. I'd also have a tax on...
Because you'd still buy it.
Yeah. I'd tax the hell out of bike riders. That would be...
Like how?
I'd put a UPC code on that bike, and I'd be like, every time you hit a... It'd be Toll City up on Lakeshore Drive. You hit that bike path, it'd be like, every time you hit a little thing, it'd be like an iPath. Beep, beep. 25 cents.
Oh,
beep, beep.
No, I would vote against that as somebody who bikes still drive.
You know what? We're not going for you, Pete. You know, I'm going for a more well-rounded Chicagoan, a county resident who wants to hear the truth, is not going to shrink behind the PC bike riders of Lakeshore Drive. Am I right? Joking, of course. But yeah, so that, I mean, I have great ideas, a ton of ideas, man.
Bring me to City Hall.
I've got a better idea. We should do a symposium, the download symposium, where we decide which taxes we agree upon as a society. And I think that everyone would be down with, maybe not the bike riders, but you know what? They have to. They have a little iPass, and it comes out of their debit card, a little Apple Pay. So many other options you could do. I also think that depending on the articles of clothing that you wear, I think you could, you know, if you layer... That's an extra 15 cents.
You have to layer.
No, there's a lot you can do. I mean, I'm just saying, I'm throwing things out there.
Yeah.
And it's up to the alderman and the Cook County Board Commissioners to come up with whether the yay or nay. I'm just a guy who throws out ideas. But if I were doing this stuff, man, we would be surplus. They wouldn't call this Chirac. They call it Surplus City. All right, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Coming up, we're going to talk with Devorah Heitner about her new book, Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in the Digital World. I know you have issues with this as well as I do, Rob, so this is going to be good.
I heard your promo talking about Minecraft. Yeah, crazy.
Reading this is a really interesting book, not only, I mean, because there's always going to be that sort of, you know, that sort of monitoring where you're like, oh, how much time is enough time for screen time and things for kids? But this is really more about, you know, just raising digital native generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know more than we do at some point. So you have to not be that person who's scared and necessarily says, no, you got it to everything. And you have to sort of, you know, find a way to sort of mentor, not monitor. We'll talk with Devorah. I'm fascinated by it. It's very interesting.
I'll be listening, that's for sure.
All right. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight here on 720 WGN. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Libby Langdon's going to join us, interior designer. She has her own collection. She's here for an interior design conference at the Merchandise Mart. Libby's all over the place. I mean, there's not a daytime talk show that she hasn't been on talking about interior design. And I'm fascinated by it. That's an area that I don't know much about, as I'll talk about later in the show, my 20s and what was in my Ravenswood living room. I don't think Libby would approve. But she's written books. She's, like I said, she has her own collections and designers. Her book is about designing for small spaces, being from New York City. So we'll talk with Libby Langdon coming up. Also tonight, Matt Klein is back for the final installment of Picnic. That, of course, where we're giving legitimate, authentic nicknames to all the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Tonight is the final installment, and we will give nickname to Jake Arrieta. Ooh, there's already good ones coming in. A lot of stuff around ERA, like Arrieta, ERA. There's a couple texts coming in. So anyway, that's tonight coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Well, right now we take on a topic of importance, how to guide your children and your family through the digital age, whether it's screen time, monitoring activity, or just when is the right time for your child to have a smartphone. Devorah Heitner has you covered in helping us all raise digital natives. Devorah Heitner is the founder of the organization Raising Digital Natives and the author of the book Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in the Digital World. She is my guest tonight at the big table. Devorah Heitner, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I really enjoy this book. I mean, I have a 9-year-old and we talk about it all the time. And I in the promo today that was running here on WGN, I talked about the one word that sort of sends shivers up your spine, and that's Minecraft. And it's just like constant. But let's talk about all of it we're going to talk about throughout the whole hour, but digital natives, a concept. What do you mean when you say digital native?
Well, for me, digital natives are the swipe generation. So the kids who are using this super intuitive tech, this is the 4-year-old who can make a video but can't read yet and can probably make the video, mm-hmm. send the video, Skype with grandparents in another country. Because technology has become so intuitive, literacy is no longer a requirement, whereas just a few years ago, keyboarding skills presumed at least, that you were maybe 5 or 6 and could read something.
Right.
And so it's just skewed down younger and younger. Your kid can grab your phone and take some selfies as a toddler and pretty much know what they're doing.
It's amazing, too. I mean, I think you mentioned, or I was reading somewhere about the concept that it used to be text and then graphics or text and then technology, and now it's flipped. For this generation, graphics and technology come first, and the text is second.
Exactly.
All right, so let's talk about this. I mean, obviously, you put this together, and it's not necessarily what you would think, a cautionary tale of, oh, my gosh, you better watch out what your kids are looking at. They know more than you. I mean, that seems to be the common misconception, or at least the trap that we fall into when we're parents thinking about our children and essentially what they're looking at online.
Yeah, I really wanted to empower parents because I think parents know a lot more than they think they do. Even though we use tech differently than our kids do, we know a lot about life. So conflicts may come up in our kids' Minecraft world or in their texting world. Well, we've survived conflict. We may live with other human beings with whom we have conflict. We may work with other human beings, with whom we've survived conflict. And so we may have some skills, actually, that we can share with our kids on that front because they often have no clue how to deal with conflict in those spaces. Sometimes the grown-ups aren't great role models, of course, for that. Like when we think about conflict in, a national conversation right now,
we're not
necessarily modeling all the most wonderful things for kids. But in our families, we have some great ways to show kids, hey, when things get a little funky in a text, we can talk about it in person. That's a great way to interrupt the negative spiral that might be about to start here.
And, relationships, obviously that's a big part of raising digital natives. Just, one thing that always gets, there's a great question that we were just talking about around the campfire that was, the concept is your life, what about life in general is worse because of technology, because of the internet? If you think about that and you're like, well, you go through it and it always comes down to relationships. It comes down to communication and relationships. And that seems to be at the core of when raising digital natives is to continue to keep that in the forefront, that relationships and communications are good ways to deal with conflicts and other things that come up with technology.
Absolutely. When we think about what's worse, I mean, kids do have connectivity stress. We all have it. We go into a meeting, we come out, and we're worried about the amount of email we're going to have waiting for us when we've been inaccessible for an hour, let alone a night of sleep or a shower, or we just felt like unplugging over our lunch break. And our kids, the minute they get phones, they have connectivity stress. So one thing we can do is let them know, dude, you're 11. It's okay. You don't have to respond to text all night. You can turn it off, and you can tell your friends, hey, I don't text after 9.
Yeah, that's the rules, and we'll get into that, just about family time, routines, all the things that go along with technology. We're talking with Devorah Heitner. She's the author of Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. She's actually going to be out in LaGrange tomorrow night at the Parent Community Network It's a program at 7 o'clock. You can find out that information at her Twitter follow her at Twitter at Devora Heitner. She's also going to be at Glenburg North High School on September 28th. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In the studio, my guest at the big table tonight, Devora Heitner, her book Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. We're talking about raising digital natives. Before we get back on track, because I definitely want to talk about tech-positive environments, what drew you to this? What got you to a part where you're, you know, with your own organization, writing books, going to different schools? What is it about this topic that drew you in?
So I used to be a media studies professor, and I was a media historian, and we would look at the ways that moral panics would flow every time a new medium came along. And then I taught kids media culture classes to my college students, and they would get real nostalgic, like, well, we grew up with dial-up, or we grew up with MySpace, but now these kids today with their Instagram, you know, and they would get worried about, because we'd go to schools and interview third graders, and they'd get really worried about the content the third graders were seeing. And these were 19-year-olds. So to me, they were all kids, you know?
Yeah.
And I found that really fascinating.
So the 19-year-olds were getting sort of a little antsy about what third graders were looking
at. Exactly. They thought the third graders were seeing too much, you know, naughty content or violent content, and that they were, you know, too immersed in social media. And I thought, this is really interesting that these micro generations are getting, everybody's so anxious. And then I had a kid myself, and when I became a parent, suddenly the conversation around how much should I share about my child on social media came up. And my friends were all thinking about screen time, and the American Association of Pediatrics had these recommendations, but that nobody really follows. And I thought, there's some really interesting research here. So I started diving into that and left teaching college in 2012 to start raising digital
natives. Well, I find the book is very progressive in the sense that it's not that. It's not, you know, this is what the time should be for your kid to be on the device. Like, it's not that kind of thing. It's much more sort of organic about how technology works when it comes to your family, when it comes to kids. I really resonate because with a 9-year-old son, I have a hard time sometimes because I always feel like, you know, I'm letting down society because he's just so into something that I feel like, you know, if someone was, you know, ripped the roof off of my house, it'd be like, shame. How dare you have him on Minecraft for 2 hours or an hour, whatever it is. I just feel like I always feel out in the dark on that.
We can't draw such a bright line, though, between his Minecraft world and real life, because that is his social life and that is his intellectual life to some degree. It's not the only things, right? He also has face-to-face time with friends and probably does some active things that are different than Minecraft. But his Minecraft world is part of his world. He's learning about how to solve problems. He's learning what to do when he runs into conflicts. He's probably, if he's playing on public servers, learning when a stranger is creepy and best avoided. Mm-hmm. He may be learning some new words from those strangers, but you know, kids are getting exposed to those kinds of things everywhere. So I you can't really feel like as a parent you've done a bad job. You just have to talk to them about, hey, you know, if someone's making you uncomfortable or those kinds of things.
Well, I mean, I'm in my early 40s. And I feel, and I've heard this before, that, you know, this generation, the generation that I belong to, is the last generation that didn't grow up with the internet. Or, I mean, we were 20 years old, 21, 22 when it started to pop up, and much older when we got to smartphones.
I remember my first email account and how life-changing I thought that was, you know, just having email and being able to communicate.
So it makes it really hard for us as parents, I think, and even generations before us, to navigate the concept of what is acceptable, what is social, what is good, what is bad, and what might just be too much.
I think we want our kids to show us what they're doing. Like, your kid can show you Minecraft. What are you doing in this world? What are the different modes? What's so cool about it for you? What's so compelling about it for you? We don't have to dive into the point where we get a PhD in Snapchat or Minecraft, but enough to understand what our kids are doing. Just like if your kid took up lacrosse, and if you, like me, had no clue how lacrosse is played, you're like, what are they doing? They're running around with those sticks with the nets on them. You would want to know because your kid is so involved in this thing.
Right, of course.
And so I would say the same about the games that they play or the apps they use. You want them to talk to you about it. And with that kind of tour, they can also start to show you their discernment.
Let's talk about tech-positive environments. This is a real big part of this book about the idea of being a tech-positive parent, not someone who is, you know, shutting it down or, you know, what you don't know means that you can't have it in the house. Talk about what that means, tech-positive.
being open-minded, being curious about the experiences your kids have with technology, and embracing what's positive about it and finding ways that it can bring your family together. If your kid is geeking out on YouTube cooking shows, maybe they could be making dinner with you, right? So we want to put some of those tech skills to use. If they can help you organize your apps or teach you how to use your Google Calendar better, this is a good thing. So right. We want to mentor them. But on the other hand, we want to take what they're learning and use it ourselves.
And how often is that kind of thing? I mean, can you find that? Because I feel like a lot of times for at least and what we're talking about right now is just sort of middle school, young middle school kids. You run the risk of that it's really hard to connect with them or relate to what they're looking at because it's usually based on video games or something of that nature.
Sure. And a lot of parents will tell me I don't dig video games personally, like it's not my taste, and I get that. I grew up in an age where not as many girls even played video games. I think now the video games are much more gender neutral and also a lot more interesting. I might have been a gamer had I grown up today, but you know, Ms. Pac-Man didn't rock my world, so I didn't identify that way. But my kid is getting into games now, and I'm learning about the games that he's playing, and some of them are junk. You know, there's a lot of bad games, but there's also some really good ones. And so looking with him at the ones that are compelling, the ones that are interesting and that are kind of holding him in a narrative way, that's really great. And ones that also bring the family together. My husband and my son like to play a sports game together, and they watch the game and kind of trash talk the other team in the game. And it makes much more sense for us to do that on a school night than watch a real baseball game, because it's a 7-minute game. So that actually does fit in with our evening routine, in the way that actually sitting down to watch a real baseball game on a school night for a second grader might not really work out so well.
Well, you talk a lot in the book about routine. Routine is a big part of trying to get your tech routine down, also sort of working around a family time, being able to incorporate it. But also, and I think that this is a big, big part, is also monitoring the way that you use technology as a parent. If you got your face in your smartphone or your iPad or even, you know, other devices, they're watching, and they understand that that's how you do it. That's routine, and they're learning from watching you.
I am the biggest offender in my house many times. And so in our family, we're allowed to call each other screen monsters if one of us is getting a little too hooked and not being responsive, or if another family member is talking to the top of our head. And I'm often the one who's getting called out saying, hey, come be with us now. And we also say to each other sometimes, just be here now. It's like, put it away. So I've really learned to close my laptop when my son is talking to me, for example, versus just looking over the top of it. You know, making that eye contact is one thing, but let me also close that content that was pulling me in. And for our kids, it doesn't really matter if we're playing Words with Friends, posting to Instagram, or doing work.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Just looking in your phone, right?
They don't care. They just see us looking at our phones. And I've had a ton of upper elementary, like fifth graders, tell me, you know what, I have to repeat myself 5 times. My parents ask me how my day was, but then they're texting and driving and when they're picking me up. And then I have to tell them again, or they'll say, how was that French test? And then they go back to their phone. And then they're like, so how was that French test? So the kids know they're onto us. And I've actually had kids in my workshops design apps to pull their parents' attention back to the kid. It's like apps that will shut down their phone. So this is something that kids are talking about when I ask them, what's a problem you have with technology? They all talk about how their parents are connected. And I honestly, I think it's the 21st century workplace too, you know, that everyone knows find us.
Right.
And so, and then we feel like that it never ends. Most of us don't have, you know, sort of a contract where it's like, well, no, you can't email me at a certain hour. Something they're considering in places like Germany where there are labor laws to protect workers. But
yeah, right.
I think here in the US, the culture is kind of like, you have to push back yourself. I think those of us in leadership positions who are also parents should be pushing back, frankly, saying to our team, you know what, I read to my kids at night. You don't email me at 9. Don't expect that I'll be available. Or when I was a professor, I used to say to my students, if you email me at 1 a.m., don't expect a response at 1:15 a.m.
Right,
that's
right.
Not realistic. I'm sleeping. And if
absolutely.
I'm doing something at 1 a.m. that's fun, it's not responding to your email.
Pete's drawn that line with me. I feel like... I'm a guy who's emailing at all hours, and Pete is. We're working on it. We're working on it as a family, Pete and I. All right, so we're talking with Devorah Heitner. She's the author of Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. She's going to be in LaGrange tomorrow night at the Parent Community Network, 7 o'clock, and also on the 28th, she'll be at Glenbard North High School, talking about the book and talking about raising digital natives. We'll take a break. We'll get to the news. When we come back, lots to talk about. I really want to get at the concept, as the kids get a little bit older, When's the right time for them to get a smartphone? The difference between monitoring and mentoring, and also, you know, when you talk about safety, privacy, and a digital footprint. Those are big issues that are with kids right now. Devorah Heitner's all over it. We'll talk with her some more after the news. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Devorah Heitner. She is the founder of Raising Digital Natives, an organization, and also the author of ScreenWise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. We're talking about the very important issue of technology and really sort of the digital world that our children are growing up in, because you and I both are from a generation where the internet just wasn't there yet. It wasn't a thing. And so many parents have to go through, you know, how to deal with their kids being exposed to the digital world, to the internet, to everything that comes with that at a time when we can't hold their hand. And I'll tell you, so let's talk a little bit more about a little bit later in life, middle school. I mean, it used to be high school, but now we're talking about middle school and kids making a decision to get technologically involved by fifth grade.
Right. And fifth grade is like the new ninth grade, except 10-year-olds are a lot younger. I think one of the only good things about such young kids getting phones, because in many ways I do think it's real young to get such a powerful communication device, is that they're so self-righteous and rule-following at that age, and many of them are still quite aligned with adult authority. So the mm-hmm. one good thing about a 10-year-old and a smartphone is, like, the second something goes wrong, they're going to be like, look at this, to you. You know, they're going to come to their parents. Right. And, you know,
communication's a little
rat
bit
out
more
their friend
out there.
Or
yeah,
the,
right.
they're going to call out another kid in a group text and say, you're being mean. Whereas a ninth grader probably will not use that kind of language or be so, you know, kind of righteous in that particular way. So that's one of the good things. I think it is really young, though, because we're holding their hands. I mean, another difference between our childhoods and these kids is we had a lot more independence at a younger age. Many of us were playing outside and negotiating some of our own kind of friendship struggles and experiences. And these kids are living in the age of the playdate. And their social lives are more orchestrated. So it's quite a deep cliff to go from an orchestrated social life where you wake up and mom and dad have arranged your plans for the weekend to here's your smartphone, do it yourself, kid.
Right,
that's a
right.
huge leap.
And also it's a leap for parents. I mean, to say that this is going to be the time. I mean, kids are getting their own smartphones in fifth grade, sixth grade. And they are, you know, for better or for worse, they are now connected in to the real world, the World Wide Web and all that comes with it, both good and bad. And there is something about figuring out your relationship with their exposure to that.
Absolutely. And it's a really good thing to talk to kids about the fact that there's a lot on the internet that isn't great for kids or that you don't even want to see. I mean, there's a lot of violent, scary things on YouTube that I don't want to watch that are happening in the world. So I certainly don't want my child to see those things, but it can happen, right? So we do need to talk to them about it. We can't just wait and think, oh, well, if my child sees something inappropriate, then I'll talk. Because they have already. When I go talk to third graders and I say, how many of you have seen a website that you know wasn't for kids? They all raise their hands. So your kid has seen things that are scary, right, inappropriate, and you don't want to panic and freak out and scare them so much they'll never talk to you about it again. You want to ask them how they feel about what they saw and then make a plan with them. What are you going to do if you stumble on something that freaks you out? Now, if it's a middle schooler or a high schooler, they're not stumbling, they're looking. And so then you need to make sure that that you've given them some appropriate information about life's big questions that aligns with your family's values and is age appropriate for them. Again, you don't want to wait for them to Google
right,
it, you
right.
know, because
but I also
that
think
is not where you want your child figuring out.
What I like about the book is as it moves, you know, it moves us from a monitoring culture. And that's really, if you had this, if you wrote this book 10 years ago, it was like, well, there's this app and this app and this site and this program, this software that'll block anything that's on your computer.
People are still all about that, though. There are a lot of people who want to put a chip on their kid's phone and follow everything that they're doing. And then they're going to be so bored. If you start reading your kid's texts, it is a very boring. You know,
but I would even
nothing?
Say, you mentioned it in the book, and I thought this was really interesting, that, you know what, they will find, it's almost like a fence.
Right.
And when you put up a fence, any being of any kind is going to figure out how to get over that fence, get around that fence, go under that fence. And the concept of creating that relationship with your child that early, where you're like putting up a fence and then they just curiously want to get around that fence, that's not necessarily the best way to approach the internet and the digital world that we're living in now.
Absolutely. I think you know, in a way, I mean, you should be excited if you have a little hacker, because that kid's going to found a tech company and support you one day. So be thrilled if you have a little hacker, but just make sure that their ethics are good and they're going to use their hacking skills for and their superpowers for something positive in the world.
That's right. Well, I mean, there is some, I mean, there's a whole chapter that's really about the idea of monitoring versus mentoring. And that's what this is. This it almost feels like a philosophical change, and I think a good one, in the way that we're mentoring a digital society, kids that have to enter in. You have to give rules, but you don't have to necessarily be the parent who monitors or sort of censors what they have access
Certainly.
To.
And if you do monitor, you want to let them know you're doing it. I mean, covertly monitoring doesn't really get you anywhere as a parent, because how badly does your child have to mess up before you admit that you're covertly monitoring? I mean, do they have to be planning a major heist or something really awful before you say, actually, I can see everything on your phone? Better if you're going to monitor that you let them know and you tell them what you're actually looking for. I'm concerned because sometimes kids are unkind here, so I'm monitoring for that. And my plan to step back from that monitoring is I see you do these appropriate things for this many months or years. And that, you know, because you're not going to monitor when they go to college. And this is the thing I've had parents tell me, oh, I'm still geo-tracking my kid on her phone to make sure she goes to class as a college student. Well, that's pretty concerning to me. Like, if you don't trust your 18-year-old that you've sent off to college to go to class and you're geo-tracking them, it seems like, you know, a bit strong, right?
Right.
A little bit CIA-ish. So thinking that you want to kind of step back and say, okay, if I have a sixth grader and I'm reading their text because they just got a phone, I want to let her know what I'm looking for. And then I want to have a plan for backing off from that and making sure that I'm still here for her, even though I'm not going to read anymore maybe next year. She can still come to me if she's being harassed, if she's in a jam, if something's going, you know, haywire in her life. I'm still here, but I don't need to be reading every text.
Yeah, and I'm interested in the concept. I mean, obviously, safety and privacy, and there really is a difference. And I think that, you know, I thought when I first was sort of reading it, I'm like, well, what about safety? What about privacy? But it's really, they're almost in a weird way, it's sort of versus, in the way that safety and making, you know, sure that your children are protected from predators or from bad stuff that's on the internet versus privacy, which is, you know, a different game, I guess. So talk about the concepts that are out there, you know, that we have to navigate when it comes to the things that the internet, you know, exposes us.
These kids are so different than we are. I mean, as a Gen Xer, I so value my privacy. And this generation, when I talk to high school and middle school kids, these post 9/11 babies, they are like, I just want to be safe. I'm not doing anything wrong, so it's okay if the government sees all my posts and knows all the library books I check out, because I'm not doing anything wrong. I'd rather be safe than private. So they have a completely different, I feel like, well, I'm not doing anything wrong either, but why should anyone know what library books I check out or what I buy on Amazon? And so what we want to do is start to encourage our kids to be kind of skeptical, to think about why do you see that ad for the thing you were just searching for? And, you know, why do you get different search results on Google than I get when I search for something? And what does that tell you about the way, you know, the internet is tracking you, right? And I don't want to make our kids paranoid, but I think they should be skeptical. They should be very skeptical. I'm teaching my 7-year-old to be skeptical about in-app purchases.
That's
well, they just want your money.
Right.
Don't give them your money.
It's a simple
or my money, as the case may be.
But that's so interesting, because it isn't. You and I probably share the same sort of values. The idea, the concept I am very skeptical. I'm always thinking about, you know, the privacy issues in my life. But a new generation, because it's just so inundated, they're not thinking that way. They think in a whole different way. Everything's out in the open and I'm okay because I'm not doing anything wrong.
They're growing up more public, and we need to help them learn that it's okay to have boundaries. Kids now think it's rude to refuse a follower on a social media app. They also don't know that it's okay to say no to having their picture taken. This is one of the things that I talk about in the book, is ask your kid before you take and share their picture on social media and get consent. And a lot of that is because we want them to go out there and be able to say no. If someone takes their picture without permission, they should be like, hey, dude, don't share that. I didn't say that was okay. And they have no idea that it's okay to express a boundary that way.
And that's important, especially when we get into some of the, like we said, the nefarious parts of the internet, when you talk about sexting and you know, kids sharing their bodies with each other, and then what happens at school where, you know, that gets shared and shared and shared. That's a real thing that happens a lot in middle schools and high schools. But it really is about trying to, you know, let them know that permission is an important thing. You have to have consent. You have to have permission. And I think I really took that away from the book when I said, how often have I asked my son, hey, is it okay if I post this picture of you on Instagram. You know, how is it okay if I post this? How much time my wife has said that, you know, here's something funny that he did. We never, I don't think I've ever said, is it okay if I put this up? I think that's so interesting.
It's a great thing to start doing, especially as they get closer to the age of using social media themselves, because then they could say, like my kid might say, well, it's okay to just share in the family. So I might be able to text it just to my husband or something, because it might be a funny picture or a silly picture and he might not feel like it's for, you know, worldwide consumption. And even though he doesn't really know the size of my social network, he has some sense that that's more public than just family only. So giving kids the idea that they're different publics, that you could share something in the family, you could keep that picture just to show to their future spouse, you know, or you could keep, you know, share it with quite a lot of people in public, that's a good thing for them to think about. So when they start thinking about the size of their own social mm-hmm. network, they can start to understand, oh yeah, I shared that with a lot more people than I was thinking about. I was just thinking about my three friends, but now these other friends are feeling left out because I shared that picture of us I didn't really think about. And that's a skill that, honestly, it's quite hard even for adults who are using social media to grasp. I mean, it's something I have definitely made errors. Right. And then we also need to teach our kids that those errors are not catastrophic. You know, like, okay, your friends feel bad. You can work this out. You're not a terrible person.
Goes back to that idea of building relationships and communication outside of the digital world so you can answer and sort of deal with the conflict. Devorah, one of the last things we'll talk about is the digital footprint. This is something we all deal with as adults, where you create a sort of persona online of who you are and share things with people, and the stuff kind of trails and it creates almost an archive of the person. For kids, this is a real thing, especially if they're starting with smartphones and social media at such a young age. We didn't have to deal with that. We can make choices as adults. They're not. I mean, talk about the concept of building and creating and, I guess, communicating to them the concept of a digital footprint.
Well, I think we try to scare kids a lot with showing them examples of people who've really messed up their digital footprint. And I would say we want to do more positive example sharing. So thinking about the Olympics, obviously there's some very negative digital footprint stories and reputation stories, but think about some of the athletes that came out where you have so much admiration for them regardless of their medal position, you know, where they're bringing new attention to a huge social problem in their home country, or they're reframing a conversation about adoption and being a role model for adopted kids mm-hmm. everywhere. I mean, these are kind of amazing opportunities. And we want to show our kids, like, this is what you can do with a positive reputation. These are the ways you want to be, you know, admired. And then you also want to give them examples that are very real to them. You know, we can't focus with an 11-year-old on college and career. Even if we're very focused on that and our families maybe too much, we should be instead saying, think about your friends' parents. They might be following their kids on Instagram. Will they want you at their table if they see a gross post or bad language? So make it really immediate for them, not something that's, you know, way in the future. Right. That's way too abstract to say, you won't get into the University of Illinois, or you can't go to Princeton
like
if 10 you
years ago. That feels
post
like,
that.
Yeah.
It's just not
the
real
old
to
story
them.
We'd read all the time about, if you're drinking on Facebook, you got a photo of you drinking. What if a job interview? You saw that, you're like, all right, you know, that
exactly.
to me seems the old way. As we sort of transition to a new way, giving different examples of how a digital footprint can work for you and not work for you is a good thing.
Yeah, and show them examples of people that are doing a good job. And I certainly would also give some negative examples to high school kids and say, look, if I'm choosing between three babysitters, the one with the drug reference on the Facebook page isn't going to get the job. And it's not that I'm drug testing the babysitter, but I'm looking at who had the bad judgment to make that their picture, or who, you know, share that in such a public way with no privacy settings. That person maybe isn't ready to come to work for our family.
There you go. The I guess the takeaway tonight is make everything private.
I think put things in public that you can be proud of, and also recognize that it's a performance too, that our kids sometimes feel real sad when they look at other people just having an awesome time. But recognize everybody's performing a little
a
in those social media
yeah.
spaces. So, and we kind of want to teach our kids actually to do that, to not, you know, be too open and plain about super negative things or super private things. But then they have to remember everyone else is doing the same thing.
There's so much in this book. We haven't even got to social media, of course, as we're sort of hitting the end here. But also just high school students have a whole other area of problems when it comes to social media and their digital footprint and being in a digital world. We'll have to get to that at a different time. Devorah Heitner is the author of Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. She's also the founder of the organization Raising Digital Natives. She is going to be in LaGrange tomorrow night at Parent Community Network. That's at 7 o'clock, and she'll be on September 28th at Glenbard North High School. You can find out all the information at Twitter, at Devorah Heitner. Devorah, great having you, and thanks for coming in. We appreciate
Thanks so much. Enjoy some Minecraft with your kiddo.
Such an interesting topic. We should have Devorah back. It'd be great to do some call-in because I get a lot of texts as well just about issues they have to put through. 815 said there's no privacy. No one gets privacy in my house till they're 18.
Is that true? Is that how it works?
I think that's how it works in this person's house. But, I mean, I think that there's – I'm fascinated. And what I really enjoyed about it, the book and the conversation, is just this – a progressive movement to rethink the way we approach all the issues that kids have to face in a digital world. You know, because the rules that were made at the beginning, let's say 10, 15, 20 years ago, were made by people who had no concept. And they're like, you're not touching that space bar. You know what I mean? And I think after time, when you think that, you know, all of that has changed, and even to the point where smartphones now are just have disposable, you know, apps when it comes to Snapchat, things of that nature, Instagram. I mean, there's a whole different world out there. And, you know, I think what we're going to start to see is a generation of 21-year-old, 24, 25, 30-year-olds become the parents. And that's, I think, where it gets interesting. When the kids of today who are 17 or 18 become parents in 10, 15 years from now, and they have an understanding of what they had to go through as digital adopters, I think it'll even itself out.
Well, even then, I mean, there's going to be changes. We're going to keep on changing the technology, though, so you're going to always have to adapt.
Holograms.
I don't know how it. Robots. I don't know how parents do it.
Well, that's the problem. Rob says, you know, here is your iPads, you know, Minecraft. I've done that. I do that all the time. I got to be honest. Like, I feel like there are times when it's I will take it away, and I'll say, talk to me. Let's talk. And then you know what he says? You have any questions about Minecraft?
That's a good line.
But he'll do the other. What I did on Sunday is I actually walked. I said, "We're walking. We're going to go walk the neighborhood. I'm sick and tired of us being on watching football." And you know, he was on his iPad, and I'm like, "Let's go walk. Let's just walk, and we can talk, and we'll come back. Let's get some exercise." The whole time we were walking, it was just it was very creative conversation, but it was all about what he was going to create on Minecraft.
Do these devices, do they all have parental locks, and do you look at history and all that kind of things? Yep.
It is funny because there was a one time we looked at the history, and it was kind of surprising because I hadn't looked at it in a while, and this was maybe a year ago, eight. And I forgot what the term was, but it was a very rudimentary body part term like butt. Or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but it was like obvious that somewhere along the line, and that was when I was like, oh, here it starts.
Yeah.
You know, it was either butt or boob.
Yeah.
It was something
like
that was just like,
somewhere,
yeah, exactly.
A Family Guy.
Either Family Guy or the computer lab at school, one of the two, but that's what happens, and they're getting older, you know, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, so that kind of thing. So, all right, so we will... I'm looking for Libby Langdon's here. We're going to talk with Libby Langdon, great interior designer. She's here for the Casual Market, which is an outdoor furniture patio market at the Merchandise Mart. It's a big sort of, you know, conference. She's just designed her own line of outdoor furniture for a company here in Alsip, Illinois. So we'll talk to her about that. We'll also talk about interior design space and much, much more. That's coming up here in the Download. Stay with us. Thank you, Rob. Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Matt Klein is back for our final installment of Picnic, where we're giving every member of the 2016 Chicago Cubs legitimate, authentic nicknames. We have done everybody. We are down to the final names. Jake Arrieta is going to get his comeuppance tonight. 312-981-7200. If we choose your nickname, you get a prize. We'll give you a pizza, something like that. Is there a pizza to give away? I didn't even check, Pete. Yeah. All right, so we got that. 312-981-7200. That's coming up, and I'm excited because there's already stuff coming in, and this is the one we've been waiting on. Jake Arrieta, the Cy Young Award winner, really the ace of the Chicago Cubs, and he will be our I want to say victim, but victim's not the right word. He will be our subject for tonight's picnics. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. Well, tonight, let's talk space. Not outer space. Let's talk about your space. Interior design and organizing where you live says a lot about you and your comfort, your happiness. This coming from a guy who throughout his 20s lived in a one-bedroom apartment where I had a hand-me-down couch, a strange rodeo painting that really had no significance. I had picked it up out of the trash. And I had an incense holder in the shape of a woman's head, and that was what I would use. And you know what, though? I was happy. It made me happy. That incense head, that made me happy. And I think that that's at the core of what interior design's supposed to do. There's an industry. There's a science. There's a borderline religion when it comes to designing your home. One woman who's made a career out of design and production is none other than Libby Langdon. The New York-based interior designer, author, and personality can be seen all over the Today Show, several other daytime talk shows, and she's a current columnist for House Beautiful magazine. She's also got her own home decor collection for both furniture and accessories, and now outdoor patio furniture. That's what she's in town for. She's the author of Libby Langdon's Small Space Solutions, and she's here for Casual Market Chicago at the Merchandise Mart, where she served as one of the keynote speakers. Libby Langdon. Good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
This is not a topic that I usually take on, but I am really intrigued by it.
I like it. I'm kind of intrigued by a large rodeo painting.
Yeah,
so that is, it's like nothing I've ever seen before. So
I think that's I agree. Like,
yeah.
I've never come across it again. I think I know now why it was in the garbage.
That's a good idea. It's a good resting place.
Let me ask you about it. I mean, I was, you know, sort of talking about happiness, and there is something about, you know, personal space connected to the way that we sort of, you know, want to, who we want to be and how happy we are. I mean, talk about interior design and the philosophy behind it.
Absolutely. I think when people love where they live or they feel that their space feeds them or gives them something back, that manifests itself in every other aspect of your life. And I think some small changes can make a big difference. I think oftentimes people are so worried they're going to do the wrong thing, they do nothing.
Right.
And that's not right either. But I honestly can see the way it changes the way people feel about their life when they're home and when they're also out and about. I think also these days, gosh, there's so many different visual things for people to wrap their heads around, whether it's websites or, you know, online buying sites or, you know, reality TV shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
People
right.
are bombarded visually with beautiful images nonstop. And some of it is aspirational, and some of it can be inspirational. And so I feel that creating a space that you really love to come home to makes you feel different at the end of the day.
There has to be something in there with reality television just exploding around the concept of home improvement and design. I mean, it really is playing to something inside of us that wants that experience. So we watch something transform. We watch, you know, the beauty come from you know, the ashes. And,
absolutely. Anyway. I think also one of the wonderful things about makeover television, and that's when I actually started my career, was doing makeover TV, is you see what some small changes can make in a very short amount of time,
right.
A really dramatic difference. And I'm not talking about the shows where they, you know, send a couple out for dinner and they like re-drywall their whole house. That is not happening. That is just not true at all. I'm going on record saying that.
That did not happen, right?
That did not happen. But I do think it's wonderful for people to know there are lots of little things that they can do to make a big difference in their home and not feel like they have to bring in a contractor
right.
or an outside person.
Well, for you, I mean, how did you get into this stuff? I mean, you said you got your start in makeover TV. Talk about your career and what drew you to interior design.
Yeah, I grew up in High Point, North Carolina, where a lot of furniture is manufactured. And my mom was an interior designer. My dad was in textiles. So I kind of grew up in the home furnishings industry and then had sort of many other paths, career paths, but started in makeover television. And that for me was my interior design school. I didn't go to interior design school. I started on a TV show on Fox called Design Invasion, and I would have 12 hours and $6,000 to make over a space I'd never seen before. And it turned me into a problem solver. It turned me into a solution maker. It turned me into a little bit of a mind reader. And I think instinctual interior design is probably a better path than, you know, someone who's very technical and says, I can make a condominium out of popsicle sticks. That is not going to help you.
So there is emotion and instinct when you approach being a professional.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is about the feeling you get when you walk into your home, and does it fulfill the lifestyle that you want to live? And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to have a big budget. That's the other thing.
Are you the kind of interior designer and designer who can walk into a room and automatically, just by the layout of the room, not necessarily the furniture that's in it, but just the way that the windows shine in and everything, be able to assess right away what the best concepts are for the room?
Yeah.
I'm terrible at that.
No.
I have no idea about that.
You know, it is hard to get an objective look at a space that you've lived in for a while. And it's so much easier for someone on the outside to come in. But what's fascinating about it is people leave you clues. If they have a weird black leather sectional and some, like, you know, TV stand, but then they have some lighthouses and like a black and white picture of beach dunes, they want something that's kind of beachy. Black sectional sofa is not screaming beachy, but people leave you clues of what they really want. And I think when you do makeover television, you have to be very perceptive. And that's also a little bit of the fun of it. It's kind of gets you in there and thinking. But you do go into a space and you say, holy smokes, they're afraid to put the TV in front of that window, or they're afraid to put the sofa in front of the window, and they feel like the TV has to be there, and there are just no rules. There are really no rules. And so a designer can go in and just sort of throw the pack of playing cards up in the air and say, throw it all out. Look at this.
Yeah, right. Libby Langdon is my guest. She's an interior designer. She's also a author, a personality, as well as a designer, because she has her own collections, both furniture, accessories, and, of course, outdoor patio furniture, which is why she's in Chicago. She was a keynote speaker at the Casual Market Chicago. We'll continue our conversation. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Libby Langdon. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Libby Langdon in studio with me. She is an interior designer. She's an author, personality. You can check her out on Today Show. Also, pretty much every other daytime talk show that's out there. I mean, it's amazing. You're also the author of Libby Langdon's Small Space Solutions, which probably comes in handy in New York City, I would assume.
Yes.
She's in town for the Casual Market Chicago. She was a keynote speaker at the Merchandise Mart, and she has just designed a line of outdoor patio furniture. Talk about this. This is an Illinois company.
Yeah.
They're out of Alsip, right?
Yeah, they're out of Alsip. It's a great company called North Cape. And it was so much fun to partner with them because they had their own style, designs, what they were doing. And it was just really exciting because they wanted to bring in a completely new look, new designs, new feel. And it was just, it's been a great partnership. And it's also fun to partner with somebody that says, go, take the ball,
run
with it.
Well, I was going to ask, what is when you're designing collections, whether it be decor, furniture, outdoor patio furniture, what is the Libby Langdon special that makes it different than anything else?
You know what it is? I think I have, we kind of call it easy, elegant, everyday style. The easy is it's not complicated, it's not fussy, it's approachable, it's accessible. The elegant is it's stylish. It can still be really beautiful and not ridiculous. And then every day is, let's face it, we all live in our homes every day. We've got dogs and kids and we like to entertain, and people drink red wine and it goes all over the place. So it's a much more approachable, thinking to design. But what I would say is when I go to design a collection, I have a regular interior design business. I work on you know, people's homes all over the country. And I feel like when I get to sit on the front lines one-on-one with those consumers all day, every day, and hear what they want and what they don't want. And I kind of wish the sofa had an arm like this, or I'm looking for something like this. All of that information gets injected into the back of my brain. And when it's time to design product, it all comes out. Okay. And so I'm not designing anything too wacky. I'm not like showing a hot pink sofa, because I've never had a client who's wanted a hot pink sofa.
You're not necessarily the contemporary artist of interior design, right?
Nope, it's nothing wacky.
Not the Andy Warhol, right?
So my style is what we call transitional. It's sort of a sleek line with some traditional notes and a modern twist. But It's basically what I see people wanting, and I'm not going to reinvent the wheel or do anything too crazy.
Let's talk about that, because, you know, I don't know much about furniture. I just bought a townhome probably a year ago, and, you know, that was a new experience for me to buy different pieces of furniture and go to different stores and be like, oh, nice. This, the legs don't screw up.
Right.
That's nice. This is really interesting. But I mean, talk about what makes great furniture, because there's a lot of different levels of furniture, especially when we talk about the stores they're selling, whether it be, you know, stores like Target or even IKEA.
Right.
Then you've got the Crate and Barrels or the Room and Boards, which
right.
are here in town. So talk about how furniture and the status of furniture making today.
I think the status of furniture making today is really about appealing to where somebody is in their life stage. If you are just getting out of college, mm-hmm. go for IKEA. It's great. You know, it also just depends on where you are financially, but there are loads of sort of middle level furniture manufacturers that offer great value, that are pieces that you will have for a really long time. One of the most interesting things for me is I have loads of clients that have kids, and they say, I'm just going to get this. I'm going to wait until the kids go to college. They're going to trash it. And I'm like, you have a 2-year-old. That's a very long time to
How long
wait.
Is a couch supposed to last? What is it, 10 years?
Yeah, probably about 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
It just depends on how much you destroy it, you know. But I think there are levels, mid-levels of furniture, where it's an in-between price and it's not totally crazy, but the construction is good. I think cushions make a big difference. Foam is obviously a lot less expensive. Blend down gives you that cushiness. So it's kind of what your wallet will bear, mm-hmm. and also kind of kicking the tires and seeing what you think will work. But there's also loads of things that we're doing now, and it really does apply to the outdoor market. But I tell everyone that has kids, dogs, like to entertain, use outdoor fabric on your indoor furniture. It's luxurious. It's soft. It's beautiful. It's great colors. And it can really give you lasting power on a piece of furniture that you maybe want to spend a little bit more money on. A great, like, performance outdoor fabric will give you longevity with furniture, for sure.
There's so much I don't know about. I mean, obviously, there's the artisan movement, too. You'll see a lot of resale or, you know, sort of. We do a segment on Thursday nights where people will call and talk about pieces of furniture or memorabilia or collections. We call it swap meet. But it's
right.
interesting, because Chicago has a lot of different places that will repurpose stuff. You'll see I have this sort of credenza that if you look really closely, once you pull it off, it says this is where handkerchiefs go. It says handkerchiefs.
Wow.
Like, but the point being that there is some of this stuff has been built to last, and it can be repurposed.
Absolutely. The other thing I think with a lot of people when they're creating a design of a room is I do recommend, if you have a beautiful antique piece from your grandmother or whatever, mix it in with a really modern sofa and a silver chair. The rules have gone out the window. And it's interesting, because I think there's some really special pieces, like what you're saying, handkerchiefs here. That's history. That's
right,
patina.
Right, right.
That's
all right.
That's yumminess.
Where can I sell it? Don't tell my wife.
Okay.
She's going to come back and the TV's going to be on the ground. I'll be like, Libby Langdon told me I can get some top dollar for this.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Libby Langdon in studio with me. Can you stick around?
Would love it.
Let's do a quick break, and then we'll get an update on tonight's news, and we'll come back with Libby Langdon, interior designer, here in studio. Stay with us. Thank you, Rob. It's Justin Kaufman here on the download, 720 WGN. My guest, Libby Langdon, interior designer. She is the author of Libby Langdon's Small Space Solutions. She's also a New York-based interior designer, author, personality. She's just in town doing the keynote for Casual Market Chicago with her new line of outdoor patio furniture. Libby, let's talk about interior designers, because I would never use an interior designer, and it's nothing personal. I would never think that would be for me, you know, and I wonder if that's a misconception.
It's a huge misconception, but it doesn't go without support from years ago, the notion of an interior designer to this sort of snooty person coming in and saying, it's going to cost you $10,000 to do your drapes.
Right? Yeah.
But at this point, interior designers are much more accessible. They'll come in and just work with you on your living room. The goal, too, with an interior designer is to help expose you to manufacturers that aren't just retail stores, so you could get a higher quality, maybe a better level of furniture at a better price, and pieces that you would have for a very long time.
So essentially, they have better relationships with the industry, meaning that, you know, I don't have that relationship, so I'm at the whim of whatever store I go into. But
exactly. I think what's happened, too, is retail stores have struggled over the years. And while the retail stores have struggled, interior designers have just grown because people are realizing, well, I don't need to go to the retail store where they're marking it up three times. I can hire an interior designer and they're going to, you know, give me a better deal and the markup isn't as high. And it depends on the designer that you're working with, obviously. But it depends. It depends on what you're shopping for as well.
And I don't know a lot about the interior design industry, and I'm glad to have you here. Are you at odds, or is the competition retail? I mean, is the retail stores try to be the interior designer for the customer and just bypass you?
I think what's exciting about retailers now is they're realizing they can create in-store design centers.
You see that, right?
Yeah, so people can go in and feel like it's a more interactive experience than you're going to have the red sofa, the blue sofa, or the gray sofa. So in that respect, that's a wonderful thing for retailers to offer to people. So I don't really think it's a competition, but I do think it's important for people to know that there are interior designers out there that you can work with. They're not going to charge you a gazillion dollars. And sometimes it's worth it for them to help you come in and kind of do it in one shot and give you one focused, cohesive design rather than sort of piecemealing it a little bit here, a little bit there.
Okay. The other issue I would think with the designers, especially designers who are in the industry, who, you know, as in your case, you're designing collections, you're working with different furniture companies, is that your competition are going to be celebrities. You have people who come in who are like, you know what I want to do? I want to do a record. I also want my own line of guacamole. And can I do furniture too? I mean, that's, you see that, you know, especially in stores like retail stores like Walmart or Target.
Right.
You'll see celebrities sort of slap their name on furniture.
Right. That's called white labeling. And what happens is it's a brand that a store wants to align themselves with. So what they'll do is they'll have a design team. They'll go in and say, hey, here are three chairs. Which one do you want to put your name on?
That's all I got to do.
And a representative for the celebrity will say, I think they'd like that one. And so that's how that happens. But it's true. There are loads of people that love those brands, and that's the way they want to do it. For me, that's not interesting at all. I want to create things based on holes in the market that I try to source for clients and I can't find.
Your company is pretty much based, I mean, you're based in New York City in Manhattan.
Yes.
Talk about, I'm interested in how interior design works in this country. Is it the same kind of concept as we see with textiles and with actual, you know, the actual building of clothes or making of clothes, that it's really you have to be in New York City to be an interior designer?
No, I think the exciting thing about interior design right now is so many people are hungry to have beautiful homes. And from websites like Pinterest or House or, you know, buying websites like Gilt or, you know, Wayfair, whatever it might be, people want to live in a beautiful way. And I think what's fun is, you know, I've done interior design jobs in New York, in, you know, Dallas, Austin, Texas, very design hungry towns. Mm-hmm. And so I think people are realizing that they can have gorgeous interior design, whether it's Arkansas or, you know, Milwaukee. So there, New York is a hub, Chicago is a hub, Los Angeles is a hub, Miami is a hub. But I think what's fun is there's enough work out there to go around no matter where you live.
I was
going to
ask
country.
About Chicago. I mean, the Merchandise Mart, obviously the Merchandise Mart, I mean, that has been design centered for a long time. And there's been a move to make it a tech center, to make it other things, but design still plays a major role at the Merchandise Mart. You come into town a lot. I mean, this is not just sort of one time. And you're here a lot, but you're here for conventions, for shows, for other things that are happening. Chicago has a name when it comes to design.
Without a doubt. And I think people see this as the Merchandise Mart as a go-to resource. I think also when you have a space like the Merchandise Mart, where there's so many different resources in one area, it helps interior designers, clients, it helps you to be more efficient. You're not going all over the place. You're going to the sixth floor and you are going to these five showrooms, or you know you're going to these fabric showrooms. And there's value in that. There's value to the client because the designer isn't all over the place. And there's value to the designer to just make it easier and less stressful. And I think it's important that there are buildings like that where people feel like, I'm going to go in and I'm going to knock all of these things off of my list.
Also, I mean, for you to be a successful interior designer, to have this success, to be able to write about it, to do keynote speeches about it, to have your own company, to run collections or design collections. I mean, I ask this of musicians. I'll ask it of creative artists, filmmakers. Relationships play a big role in this. The idea that you have to, you know, your name is your currency. Talk about how that works in interior design. I mean, you're working with different designers or different fabric makers and whatever, and you really have to have a network to be successful.
You absolutely have to have a network. And what's fascinating is I would say 10 to 15 years ago, there was no real network. Interior designers we lived in our own little bubbles. There was no reason for anyone to interact, and there used to be a sense of competition among interior designers and different manufacturers. Now, because of social media, we are a community, and we realize there's enough work to go around, and it's about sharing information, sharing resources, and it is so much more fun now than it used to be. It's not even funny. So we get together, everybody goes to markets, so it's a much more relaxed, exciting vibe in design than it ever has been before.
For you, I mean, is the goal is to find things that are fun? I mean, you started in Makeover TV. You've been on the daytime talk shows. You've launched your own talk shows. I mean, what's the future for you? I mean, are you going to spend your time spending on designing people's homes? Or are you thinking about getting back into media and continuing that trend of doing makeover television?
There are really three parts to my business, Libby Interiors. There's the interior design part, where I'm just working one-on-one with regular everyday clients. Then there's the media part of House Beautiful and Today Show and television. And then there's the product design. And they all actually feed each other. I need to work with the everyday clients that gives me information about what products I need to design. The media helps me promote the products, right, as well as get new clients. So it's all this sort of weird, intertwined, crazy pretzel that is my world.
Well, if I will call you if we ever have an idea here at the Download for a new makeover television show, something that we can do, like, you know, where it's like, okay, we're going to build a house from scratch in an hour and a half, something like that.
Don't call me for that, but if you want a quick gun and run makeover in 6 hours, I'm your girl.
Libby Langdon is an interior designer, author, and personality. She can be seen all over daytime talk shows, including the Today Show. She's a current columnist for House Beautiful magazine. She has her own home decor collection of both furniture, accessories, and outdoor patio furniture. She was in town to the keynote at the Casual Market Chicago at the Merchandise Mart. Libby, thanks so much for stopping by. Great to see you.
Loved it. This was great. Thanks.
bringing out the hits. Two things I've learned about this. NPR did a big thing on the song of the day, and they talked about this song and why it's endured for so long. It's a great track. The second thing is that this is the – I learned this from Ramsey Lewis, that a lot of the guys – when Ramsey Lewis was in here for the big table, he talked about a lot of the guys that were in Earth, Wind & Fire that did this track. There were parts of this production team, this band that put together September were also – musicians that were working with Ramsey Lewis. Oh, that's cool, right? And you think about the this song in relation to Ramsey Lewis and the Sun Goddess. And that's what we were talking about, like can't get high like I used to. There it is. All right, got it. I could have been in Earth, Wind & Fire. Should have been, man. Or maybe I was. Maybe I've been reincarnated from one of the guys that isn't with us anymore. I turned into a talk show host, WGN Radio. Coming up, Picnic. Very excited, Jake Arrieta. I'm also very excited because Esmeralda Leon's back in the building. Hey, there she is. I don't want to disparage Roger, but I don't know what he was doing last week. He was hilarious.
Traffic?
No, he was great on traffic. He's fine on traffic. He's no you, but he's fine on traffic. But he was a judge on Picnic for Anthony Rizzo. And Esmeralda, when we got there and I gave him the three, he goes, he just came up with his own.
Oh, no.
Like, I don't think we explained the bit to him.
He's
like,
he's
quite
a character.
I would call him the magic man. And I'm like, what are you, what? No, that's not, we just did a whole hour on this.
Aw, Roger.
It was great. Super funny, though. So now I think there has to be an asterisk next to Anthony Rizzo because I'm not even sure what we ended up with. Wizzo?
I think
nobody wanted
the
Wizzo
official record.
Yeah, super funny.
I wrote Wizzo down as.
Did you? But there was another one too, like
ZD.
That was Rob's. Martyr wanted ZD. Right. Anyway, we might have to do Anthony Rizzo again. So fun. I'm not kidding about that incense head. I had an incense head that I had. It was like a Nubian queen incense head. Have you ever seen those? Where it's like almost like you'd pick up like on Canal Street in New York City. It was like it was this head, and you would put the incense holder inside the head, and then it would look like smoke was coming out of her mouth.
Yeah, very classy.
That and my rodeo painting and my hand-me-down couch that I got from my parents. And it was funny because when we were talking to Libby and she was talking about, you know, you couch about 10 years. I'm like, geez, I learned from my parents. I'm like, you hold that couch like a dear family member for as long as you can. I think that for a while there, the couch that I had in the 70s and 80s became the basement couch in the 80s, 90s.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I've been arguing that with my wife for a long time. Like, we had these couches that probably lasted about 8-9 years. And when we moved, she's like, yeah, we got to get rid of them. I'm like, nah, there's got to be a place we can put these. They're basement couches. You know, they're going to be around forever. And she's like, no, they're not. That's not a thing. And I'm like, well, we don't have a basement. So I always like really upset that those couches left.
What do you use your couches?
I guess I do. I mean, I do, yeah. It's very stylish. Our living room, Julie does a tremendous job of like
putting it all together.
Yeah, she puts it together. It looks dynamite. It looks like the kind of thing Libby would do. Like, it's just like everything is coordinated, the paint and everything. It looks really cool. It looks like it shouldn't be lived in. Like, I feel like half the time I'm like, oh, I need to pick up. It's like the clerk at any moment is going to be coming over and telling me I have to leave my living room. But it's a good look. I like it.
But so then since you use it often, that's you're going to have to get new pieces.
Yeah.
More frequently than somebody who, like, we don't really use. We have two
but
sofas
you have
in our
pets too.
Yeah, so we'll check. Like, they're for the amount that we sit in them. Actually, to like watch TV
it doesn't really happen
too often. So
you're more of a sit up guy. I know you. You're always working out, so you're always doing sit ups when you watch your Netflix, right?
No, I hate when people say at the gym. The guy always says like, "Hey, you can do a couple of those lifts when you're watching TV." I'm like, "No, I'm not going to be doing."
Somebody
it.
Tell me that's an instructor.
Yeah,
so not
and
the guy
no,
who's just working
no,
out next
no.
to you.
It's not the but. Yeah, no, it's the instructor.
There's nothing worse. That's for the worst. When the guy next to you critiques your working out style.
had that happen yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah.
An instructor?
No, yeah. The guy next to me, like, we were doing these, like, some sort of, you know, there's a thing hanging from a wall, a stretcher thingy, whatever, you're hanging from a wall, and you're supposed to, like, do a kind of, like, put your arms inward, but I wasn't doing it right, so he pointed to me and said, hey, no, do it like this, because you were looking in a mirror. So I'm, like, sitting there watching this dope do. He looks like Chris Martin. That's two. See him all.
You're doing
time.
It wrong. Here, let me take my shirt off and show you. let me get some lotion on these pecs, and I'll show you what you're doing wrong, Pete. There you break, man. That's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, if you did it this way, you'd be getting so much more torque off. Shut up.
There's a lot of worse when it comes to gym etiquette.
Yeah, right. We should just do a worse for gym. Yeah.
But, like, we could, like, I could use my couch is probably around 10 years old, too. But
you could keep it.
We could keep it and then maybe, like, just reupholster it.
Well, one of the issues I ran into is our style is very mod. It's very Mad Men. And so the question becomes, you know, if that goes out of style, does all that stuff have to go? Like, that was the one thing I said to the furniture person. I'm like, is this going to get all 80s on us?
Yeah,
is this
going to
get, like, all weird pink triangle? You know, like when everyone played the saxophone, that kind of thing. Like, I don't want to be in that situation where you're like, oh, man. Like, that would be the best if you designed your room to look like, you know, the guy's living room from Boogie Nights when they got together. Mono Red.
Oh, man.
That's what I wanted. You know, and that would come back in the style. But all right, coming up, Picnic.
All the fans are cheering Arrieta. Sports writer said there was no one better. You can't hit him when he's pitching.
There it is.
He's gonna go all 9 innings. Cubs winning, I'm grinning. Cause for the Cubs, it's just the beginning.
Cubs got a pitcher by the name of Arrieta. In the National League, there was nobody better. Posed on your lineup as he fends another batter. Jake Arrieta.
Hi.
Cubs got a pitcher by the name of Arrieta.
Come on. This is so good. I was just saying, we needed a dance craze. You know, we need to get back to, if we had a Macarena again, I think things we'd see in this country would just, we'd have a common understanding. Everybody would be doing line dances like this. And maybe it's a Jake Arrieta parody song that'll do it.
Who knew that Los Del Rio was still hitting the studio? Seriously.
All right, in studio with me, Matt Klein, Pete Zimmerman, Esmeralda Leon, Rob Martier. Tonight, the final installment of Picnic. This, of course, where we're giving nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs. We've been giving it to it all summer long. We've got pretty much every player nicknamed, if you will. But you know what? Tonight, we've been waiting on this one. We've been waiting and waiting and waiting. We held this one till the end because it's a tough one, but it's also arguably one of the biggest pieces for this 2016 team heading to the World Series. We're talking about Jake Arrieta, the Cy Young Award winner, one of the best pitchers to have ever been on the mound for the Chicago Cubs. The streak he had from June to June was...
Yeah.
I don't think there's ever been a pitcher ever, maybe even Major League Baseball's had something
well,
like that.
Well, certainly the second half of the season last year.
Oh, my God.
His 0.75 ERA from the All-Star break on, no pitcher in the history of baseball has had a second half ERA that low. That is official. Yeah. That's a stat.
That is a stat.
That's truth. Yeah.
Well, it's tonight, 312-981-7200, the phone number. We're going to get to some nicknames here for Jake Arrieta. What do you got? You can text it or you can call in. And let's start with Matt Klein. Matt, what do we need to know about Jake Arrieta?
Jake Arrieta is, his full name is Jacob Joseph Arrieta. He's a 30-year-old starting pitcher, jersey number 49. He is from born in Farmington, Missouri, but raised in Plano, Texas. He went to a high school, Plano East Senior High School. That's the home of the Panthers.
Okay. Always good to know.
Yeah, always good to know. It's something that possibly we could play off there. He went to, he was drafted in the 04 draft, but you can decline that. And he chose to go to college where he attended Weatherford Junior College, home of the Coyotes. And then he transferred to TCU, the Horned Frogs, for his sophomore and junior seasons.
Okay.
And then was drafted by the Baltimore Orioles. We acquired him in that. We acquired him and Pedro Strop back in 2012 for Clevenger and Feldman. I don't know if you remember that.
Scott Feldman,
trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was really hard to see Feldman and Clevenger go, but I think we got the right end of that deal.
Well, Arrieta, he came out of that Baltimore system where he was a top prospect. They thought he was going to be the big deal. He was a minor leaguer. Oh, here comes. And he never really put it together in Baltimore. It just wasn't his area.
Well, yeah, right. And he got to work with the Cubs people down in the minors. They changed mechanics a little bit. They not without getting too detailed or mechanical, they had him stay back on his right side a little bit longer before he released the ball, and it just changed everything about
beard,
his pitching technique
and the beard.
And he grew his beard out. Right. So, it's hard to say who won the trade, you know, because Baltimore isn't the AL East leaders right now if it isn't for Clevenger and Feldman.
Right.
So
Feldman mowing down the Toronto Blue Jays.
Right. So, you know, it's a win-win for everybody. And let's just see what happens come October.
Clevenger just feels like he if he's still in the league, which I don't know if he is, Clevenger feels like he'd be the guy that's warming up relief pitchers in the bullpen.
Yes.
That's a Clevenger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Clevenger he's catching balls there for...
He is the bullpen catcher, which is like an actual job. Yeah.
312-981-7200. Let's go to the phones. Let's see what we got here. Let's start it off with Kevin. Kevin, what do you like for the nickname for Jake Arrieta?
Well, I was thinking Bluebeard. There was a famous pirate Bluebeard, and Arrieta kind of got that pirate swagger, and it's got the Cubby Blue in the name,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I like that a lot right off the bat. Bluebeard.
Yeah.
All right. Good job, Kevin. All right. Okay. Hold on, Kevin. All right. What do you got for Duke? Duke, what do you like for Jake Arrieta?
Oh, Jake the Snake. Arrieta.
Like the wrestler.
I knew one of those was going to come tonight.
Yeah, that's a common
Snake.
Jake nickname,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
All right, Duke, thank
it's
you for
really.
That. All right, we'll try it out. Jake the Snake made it into the rotation. We've also got Jake Arrieta. that's very... And 312 says, why don't we call him the Anti-Cutler? I don't know if that's going to... That's a tough one to shout.
Yeah.
Anti-Cutler. I mean, let's go Anti-Cutler.
Yeah. Crossing sport. The little crossover there. Another thing about Arrieta, too, if the listeners can get any ideas, he's a fitness freak. He's big in Pilates. He's one of those people that is very calculating about all the things that he puts into his body, big on, like, kale salads and... You know, fruits and nuts, things of that nature.
And the huge beard.
And the huge beard. Right. We'll keep coming back to that.
Yeah. All right. Jake Arrieta is our subject tonight on Picnic. 312-981-7200. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we will have more here on Picnic on the Download. Stay with us.
In 2007, signed with Baltimore. By 2011, he pitched the home opener. But he was only good at letting other teams score, so they sent him to Chicago for Feldman and Clevenger. Arrieta, Jake and his kick-ass beard.
Was there another verse?
The Cubbies sent him down to Iowa. Came up in a twin bill, just gave up one run. And after they traded Villanueva, Jake Arrieta came back and joined the rotation. Arrieta, Jake and his kick-ass beard.
All right, there we go. It's the Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Matt Klein in studio, Pete Zimmerman, Esmeralda Leon, Rob Martier. We are doing our final installment of Picnic. We've been giving nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs all summer long. Tonight, Jake Arrieta, 312-981-7200. Winner gets a pizza. All right, so let's get back to the text. 815, Jake Break. Doesn't really roll off the tongue. You know, Break, Jake Break.
Well, I mean, he has a great breaking ball, but...
Right. How about this one? 847 says, Jake is a pitcher. Margaritas and sangria is typically served in a pitcher. So how about sangria or margarita?
Okay.
All right. Sangria. All right. 708, Jacob Arrieta, the model pitcher. I'm not sure. There's something going on there.
Well, he's a good-looking guy. He posed nude in the body issue of ESPN.com. Yeah. I'm probably playing something off of that. Very, very, very physically fit individual.
Yes.
708 says the eagle, which we just did the bald eagle for John Lester. Oh, 630's Jake and Bake.
Jake and Bake, yeah. I was wondering if anybody's going to go there, too. Or Wake and Jake, or...
Come on, Jake and Bake!
Jake and Bake!
That could work. That could work. All right, we'll keep going. Arugula. Arugula. Like the salad. Arugula. Our Arietta. Healthy.
Arugula. Beets.
Beets. 518 says, how about stretch for his Pilates and yoga?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Jackpot.
Flexibility. Yeah.
Or jackpot because we hit the jackpot with a trade for him.
Yeah.
847 says Vendetta. Ooh. Wow.
Why?
I don't know. I like that.
Vendetta?
Yeah, it's kind of like
I mean, it's great if you can explain it to me. I mean, it's a cool nickname.
Come on, Vendetta?
Vendetta!
Why you call him Vendetta? Why not?
Why not?
I mean, it's kind of like Jean-Claude
Van
Damme.
Is this your first time here? We've been calling him that all year.
Jake the Mower? I don't know.
The Mower.
Jake the
Mower. I ain't mowing people down at the plate. I mean.
630 says, how about khakis? Jake from State Farm?
Jake from State Farm, yeah.
Okay.
He sounds hideous.
And then 262's got the Northside Nightmare. Ooh, I like that. Before the game, he starts riding around on a horse with a suit of armor, dismounts at the mound to prepare for battle. That's brilliant.
I love the people that text. Is that a text?
Yeah, that's a text.
I love the people that text such great detail.
That's a great.
Oh, that's brilliant.
That is brilliant.
It's great just because of the amount of work that went into it.
You got to show your math. 630 says the mechanic, but I'm almost certain that 630 has said the mechanic to every single player
done. You're right.
Throughout the entire.
Just as I've said weird or feared Al Krankovich to every player so far, I think this season, I think there's been a mechanic for everything.
773 says, how about the Naked Gun? There you go.
Yeah.
He was naked.
The Naked and the Famous, the Jaked Gun, if you will.
How about Yogi Bear or Yogi Bear for his Pilates and yoga, and that he's very, very hairy and he posed nude.
Oh,
everyone
okay.
loves the nude.
I don't mind. I don't mind that Yogi Bear. I mean, a cub is a bear, and he's a yogi.
Yeah.
That's the term for yoga people. Is a bear. Yogi.
How about the aerator?
For ERA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Arietta, aerator. Mm. All right, let's go to the line. Sharon, what do you got for us, Sharon? Sharon, what's a good nickname?
Oh, well, I thought you never know what's going to come out of that oven. So, Bacon Jake.
Yeah, see? That seems to be a winner, like the sort of Shake and Bake or the Bacon Jake. That's good. Yeah, you never know what's coming out of that, how hot it's going to be.
Yeah.
Oh, you never know. You never know.
You're absolutely right. Go on.
So, go for it.
All right. Thanks, Sharon.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Let's go to Carol. Carol, what do you like for Jake Arrieta?
Okay. I got the bearded warrior.
Ooh, the bearded warrior.
Yes.
But what if he shaves his beard?
He won't.
Well, then I'll have to come up with another name.
Don't lose that number.
There you go. Thanks, Carol. That's good.
Okay. All right. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye. You too. 312 says Beef Jake. As in beefcake.
Yeah, beefcake.
He's a hunk.
Yeah.
Beef Jake.
I was actually thinking about cake earlier and I couldn't come up with anything. I was thinking like Cake Boss or something, but there's nothing you could do. That's great. Beefcake. I like it.
312 says, how about Jake a Lake? And then explains, I just like the name.
All right.
606 goes back to Jake the Snake.
If the listeners are happy, then we're happy.
312 says Jake the Ripper.
Okay.
262, the Waxless Wonder. Did you see those pics? He really, I mean, I don't want to make a big deal about it, but it's just the ESPN body issue. I mean, he's posed nude, but it was just muscles in the leg and the stomach maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want the real thing, Steve Stone did, he did male Playboy.
Yeah.
Didn't he play girl?
I think it's
back in the 80s. That's the real deal. Let's get some Steve Stone up in here.
Yeah. It is amazing that you're telling me that in that stance you can't see any part of the junk. I mean, that had to have been airbrushed or whatever.
Or taped.
Photoshopped
or
taped.
Like a Jennifer Lopez thing where they taped the 630 says JKKK, you're out. I don't know if that one's so much.
I don't know if I'd go with the triple K.
Yeah.
That might be a bad idea.
Yeah, I would either do one or 10 Ks, but I wouldn't do three.
Although I'm seeing an endorsement maybe for like plain white sheets. We could go that route, but I wouldn't go with the triple K.
There's just maybe put a hold on the t-shirt idea for that one. Ariana Grande?
Ariana Grande. I was going to say, why don't we just say Zac Efron? I mean,
847 says Jacob. That's Sue from Glenview.
Oh, Jacob.
Jacob.
Yeah, his name is Jacob. How did I not put that one together?
That's good. 901 goes, how about Harrietta? Because he's so hairy.
Okay.
Or Top Gun, because he's our Top Gun.
Right.
I like Top Gun.
He is number one. Top Gun could go in there.
Top Gun is always
I could see him wearing some aviators.
Yeah.
I could see him shirtless playing volleyball with a couple dudes on the beach.
Goose.
Yeah.
Iceman.
Iceman. Hollywood steals that. I don't want to get too into the male volleyball scene of Top Gun, but Hollywood, he really steals that scene.
Let's get into that scene. Seriously, that is incredible.
Playing with the boys.
Hey, now. Hey. Saturdays are for the boys on the beach out there and wherever they're at.
I wish there was a behind-the-scenes story of that. Who directed Top Gun?
Oh, who knows?
Who knows? But the point being that there, I want to know the story where, like, we had to stop. Because
Jerry Bruckheimer? I have no idea.
Bruckheimer's like, you know what? It's just not greasy enough.
Right.
These guys are not lotioned up enough. Right. Someone grip, get out of here and lotion these
guys
up.
Listen, you're not, you don't have enough feminine celebration after somebody scores a point. If we could ratchet that up a little bit, that'd be great.
I don't want to get too far in the weeds about that particular scene, but did you notice the only guy that had his shirt on was Anthony Edwards?
He was, yeah.
Clearly not buff enough.
Yeah. I wonder if they started the scene with the shirt off and they're like, oh, this is just not looking good.
You know, hey, Edwards.
Take three. Here, get Anthony a shirt, please.
Hey, Anthony, we're going to do this one more time. Let's get you shirt on for this one.
All right, let's take a break. We'll get the update on tonight's news. We'll come back, and we will continue with Picnic. Jake Arrieta, 312-981-7200. We got some great stuff coming in. I've already got 15 on the short list. We got much, much more to come. 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Almost pitched a perfect game, destined for the Hall of Fame. Freeze the frame, shout his name. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Doesn't give up many hits. Enjoys a hot dog and some Schlitz. Many hits, have a Schlitz. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Give him his Cy Young Award, Martin Milner, Kent McCord, Young Award, Kent McCord, many hits, have a Schlitz, perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta, he's my favorite Cub. Loves to pitch at Wrigley Field, once hurt his arm, but now it's healed. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord, many hits, have a Schlitz, perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta, he's my favorite Cub. Brawny arms and a manly beard. I'd tell you more, but it's getting weird. Manly beard, getting weird. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits, have a Schlitz. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta. He's my favorite Cub. Tonight's the night we've waited for. Lock it down and win some more. Waited for, win some more. Manly beard, getting weird. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits, have a Schlitz. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta, he's my favorite Cub. Anthony Rizzo has my full respect. Chris Bryant makes me genuflect. Full respect, genuflect. Waiting for, win some more. Manly beard, getting weird. Wrigley Field, now it's healed. Young Award, Kent McCord. Many hits, have a Schlitz. Perfect game, Hall of Fame. Oh, Arrieta, no one does it better. Arrieta, looks good in a sweater. Arrieta, Greek people give him feta. Arrieta, he's my favorite Cub.
Woo! Wow.
Wow. Bill left. Wow. I bow down to Bill on that one.
The greatest song all season came down to the very last song of the year.
That
was unbelievable. That was Bill Leff?
Bill Leff doing that, yeah. Oh, my God. Amazing. Incredible. There you go. All right, so we're playing Picnic here on the Download, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Got a lot of nicknames coming through on text, also on phone. If we pick yours, you're getting a free pizza tonight. Jake Arrieta on the line. All right, so Rob Martyr.
Yes.
You're sort of the, You're the wise man. You're the go-to of this segment. You're almost like the, I was said before, the Jimmy the Greek.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. You kind of are the guy that we go to. You've almost got your own... Right. Your what are your feel? What's your thought tonight?
What's your lead pipe lock of the week here?
My stone cold lead pipe lock of the week. I didn't go too deep on this one like I normally do. You know, I like to try to get philosophical, or I go into the player's background quite a bit. I was a little bit more visceral with Arrieta.
Okay,
I've got two: the Hulk or Brawny.
Mm.
As in, like, the brawny paper towel guy.
Ooh, he kind of looks that way. Yeah.
If you threw a flannel shirt on the guy, he's got, you know, he's buff. Yeah. He's got the big broad shoulders.
Brawny.
Yeah,
if his name was Ronnie Arrieta, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
But I like the Hulk. I mean, it's simple. We've named guys the Hulk before.
Yeah, I like it. All right. All right.
Thank you very much.
Rob Martier is on. He's on the record. On the record.
On the record with Rob Martier.
All right. So coming up here, we're going to get to all the texts and calls that are coming in. Also, rapid fire with Mr. Klein. He's got the rapid fire list of Jake Arrieta. We'll do that in just a couple minutes. 708 says bootleg. Not sure bootleg, but that seems like a football nickname, you know, the bootleg kind of thing.
Yeah, I can't imagine how that applies right now to what we're talking about.
773 says none better Arrieta. Pound the mound Arrieta.
Yeah. Mound and pound.
Win and Barrett says 214, as in grin and Barrett, except he wins and he posed nude.
Oh, Barrett. I was thinking of Michael Barrett, the former catcher. I didn't know where the Barrett was, but yes.
Or there's a second one, the Jake of all trades.
Okay.
Okay. 815 says Jake-a-lope. I don't know. 708, all K. Well, I like this one. 708 goes with Iceman. We were just talking
Iceman.
About the Iceman.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah, he's...
Iceman.
He's a steely-eyed missile man, that Arrieta. He's got ice in those veins.
Oh, I see. 815 saying, Jake brake is a device to slow down a diesel-engined powered semi-truck. Google it.
We will.
I like that they told me to Google it, too. Sorry. Jake Airmail Arrieta. This is 847. Airmail pilots around World War I were notable as much for their speed as for their fearlessness. The average lifespan of a Suicide Squad airmail flyer was only about 900 flight hours.
Airmail. Also could be applied to a Jonathan Lester throw to first base. Airmail.
Exactly. Jake the Samurai Arrieta, 773.
Okay.
How about for 705, Hubba Cubba? As in, hubba hubba, what a stutter. That's what it says.
I'm not right.
224, Air K&K.
Cubby of Seafields.
Yeah, so. All right. Another, let's see. We got another samurai, two samurais. All right. So we're getting some good stuff here. 630 says pitch perfect.
Yeah, that'll work.
Error Frietta. Easy Jake Oven. Bring in the heat.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
That one's not bad at all. Write that one down.
Easy Jake Oven.
That'll be a finalist.
630 says KJ. Yeah. All right. So that gets us to a point where I think this is perfect time for rapid fire. This is where Matt Klein comes up with his choices for the nicknames for Jake Arrieta, and he does it in rapid fire style. We give the microphone over to Mr. Matt Klein.
All right. Here we go. I got Jake Flaccid, Namaste. Jake Lively, Muscle and Throw, Kaylee Joel Osment, Jake and the Batman, Harry Carrietta, The Jakenator, Albert Winnie, Steady Murphy, Guy Iare, Kaylor Wift, The Good Neighbor, Jakeation Rental, Flex Panther, Jaker's Square, which is also a new term for Arrieta's strike zone, William H. Acey, Cale Earnhardt Jr., The Pilate Kid, Jake Superior, Nohitma Gandhi, Conceal Carrieta, Jake America Great Again, and Only the Good Cy Young.
Hey! Only the Good Cy
Young. And Only the Good Cy Young.
There you go for rapid fire with Matt Klein tonight. He gave us the good stuff. All right, we've still got a lot to go through here. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap this up. We still have a lot of stuff to get through. 312-981-7200. If you want to get in right before the deadline, do so now, and you could win a pizza. Jake Arrieta on Picnic. Stay with us.
He gets a lot of ground balls and swinging strikes. Oh, yeah. Jake. Jake Arrieta. He's got a
slowing
nice
it down.
ERA.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jake Arrieta.
This is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin playing the best Arrieta. So still going back there.
I think this is an outtake from Alice in Chains' MTV Unplugged is what we're listening to right now.
Matt Klein in studio, Pete Zimmerman, Rob Martier, and Esmeralda Leon. She is going to be the judge coming up here. Very excited for Jake Arrieta, the final night here, the installment of Picnic. 630 says the Mound Buster. 518 says the Rifleman. 773 goes back to Airmail Arrieta. He delivers.
He delivers.
630 says Goose. Why not? It makes no sense, so it's perfect. 815 says Sensei, since he's the master. 312 says Cubby Bear, B-A-R-E, of course.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. All right, let me go to the text as well. We've got Bedtime, because he's lights out.
Okay.
Ooh.
Ooh, all right, Bedtime. Let me write that down.
You've got Namaste, which you had Namaste.
Namaste.
You've got Yogi. You've got Big Zen. Ace, the bearded ace, Harry K, Body by Jake, Coverboy, Pilates Man, Yoga Pants. A lot going on there.
Is that all one person?
It's all one. It's Tommy, yeah.
The Tommy, yeah.
630 says the Beast. That's pretty good. That seems to be like what his whole thing is. All right, so I think we got a good list of stuff here. All right, so I'm going to do what we do. Let's try Rich. Let's do Rich. Should be the last word here. Rich, what do you got, Rich, for Jake Arrieta?
Snake Eye.
Snake Eye.
Because military has a guided missile that's called a Snake Eye, and the way he pitches, it's pretty much a guided missile.
Yeah, right. And also Snake Eye was the one of the G.I. Joe guys.
That's right.
Yeah, and what was it, Snake Plissken, too, from...
Yeah.
That movie, and Jake the Snake, the wrestler.
Yeah,
so.
Right. So a lot of snake. All right, great.
How about Jake Eyes?
Jake Eyes. That's quirk. Thanks, Rich. All right, so let's check it out here. All right, Matt, why don't I start with you? So let's get these down to finalists. These are the semifinalists.
Well, you pick your semifinalists because I'm probably going to recommend something that's not on that list, like Guy Iare. Which I think is great.
All right, let's see here. I'm going through right now.
No Hit Magandhi.
All right.
What did we have earlier? We had Bluebeard.
Okay, let me hear. Here's what I got.
Bedtime, I liked.
What do you like? You like Bluebeard, Northside Nightmare, Top Gun, Iceman, The Hulk, The Beast, or Bedtime?
Well, if those are going to be my options, I am going to go with Bedtime.
Bedtime.
Yeah. It's not going to win, but that's the one that I like.
You like Bedtime.
I do.
All right. Pete Zimmerman. My man.
I'm going Bedtime as well.
Really?
Out of those.
You like Bedtime, huh?
I like Khaki.
Oh, you do? I didn't have that one on there. Khaki.
Let's not forget William H. A.C. as well.
All right, so you like Bedtime over Bluebeard?
Mm-hmm.
Over Iceman?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, Iceman's good.
Iceman is good.
The Naked Gun, you don't like that one? It's okay. Here's what I have, like, is all the ones that I wrote down from the list, because there's a lot of stuff. Bluebeard, Jake the Snake, Northside Nightmare, C'est la vie, Jake and Bake, Vendetta, Naked Gun, Yogi Bear, The Bearded Warrior, Beef Jake, The Waxless Wonder.
Oh, I forgot about Beef Jake.
J-Cub, Top Gun, Iceman, The Hulk, Brawny, Easy Jake Oven, Bedtime, The Beast, Snake Eyes, and Khakis. You still go with Bedtime?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, what do you got?
I'm going to go Easy Jake Oven. Yeah, just because I've always prefer a pun. I like that one a lot.
815 says Scarietta. 773 says Bear Essentials. 773 says Obi-Wan Jake Obi.
Obi-Wan Jake Obi. I don't know.
Obi.
All right, Esmeralda, how are you?
I'm very
how
well.
How was your time off?
It was great.
Yeah,
was
you had some good. Great photos on.
How was Fenway?
It was so cool looking.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the Red Sox lost.
Yeah. Are you a Red Sox fan?
No, but you know.
You want to be there when the home team wins?
Sure.
You want just the vibe, right?
Yeah. I mean, they were all very enthusiastic regardless. So.
You want to see them do Sweet Caroline?
They did it. They did it. Yes, they did.
Were you giving nicknames to the Red Sox players while you were there?
They had their own.
They did?
Okay. I didn't know how much.
Maybe they have their own picnic going.
David Ortiz, I think.
Yeah. David Ortiz,
Big Poppy.
Big Poppy.
Yeah. He's just like T-shirts, a whole store full of just stuff for him, sandwiches named after him. At one point, they started yelling, Poppy.
Yeah, he's
as he was on he's the probably mount, the most he was insane.
He's probably the most known nickname in baseball, right?
Currently, right now, off the top of my head, I'm sure we can come up with a couple other guys, but he's probably. I mean, you're looking at one of the probably top 25. I don't think this is a stretch. Top 25 characters in the game of baseball historically.
He right. was, you know, he was quite the popular man.
He transcends the game a little bit.
He's also Mookie.
Mookie Betts.
Mookie Betts, yeah. And Big Poppy were the big ones. I was like, look, it's Mookie again.
So you got Nomah's not playing there anymore.
Hanley Ramirez. Yeah. Hey, let's give a nickname to all 25 Red Sox right now, real quick.
You know, I don't know how Big Poppy somehow got away with all the steroid stuff when everybody else around him got busted.
Yeah, it's weird.
Somehow's the only guy that came out of
it. It's definitely one of those things where you wish you kind of knew the whole story. But I don't think we're ever going to know it. I think baseball goes out of their way to protect him because he is such a popular figure. But, yeah, I mean, this was a guy that was an above-average player with Minnesota, and now he is a first-ballot Hall of Famer.
I only think about, you know, he's on that team with Manny Ramirez, and they both kind of were implicated in steroids, and then Manny Ramirez will be forever known for that, and David Ortiz is like...
Gets a little bit of a free pass.
T-shirts and sandwiches.
Right, T-shirts and sandwiches. The way it is, the American
all right.
dream.
Esmeralda, all right, for
yes.
Jake Arrieta.
Yes.
Here we go. Are we ready? That was my dramatic music. We have Bluebeard, Iceman, Easy Jake Oven, The Hulk, and Bedtime, because he puts the hitters to sleep.
And the Jakenator.
Okay.
So those are the five here. We've got Iceman, Bluebeard, Easy Jake Oven, The Hulk, and Bedtime.
I like The Hulk. Mm-hmm. I also like, which one? What was the second one?
Well, there's Bluebeard,
mm-hmm.
Iceman. Yeah, Iceman's good.
I do like that.
Iceman, the Hulk.
Because then they could do a whole thing with the Top Gun.
Yeah.
That's
true.
Highway to the danger zone.
Oh, this one's difficult.
Yeah, this is the last one, too.
I'm going to get you right into
think
the
I'm going to go. Danger zone. I'd go with Iceman.
I would like it.
I like
think that's
that
a final answer.
Yeah, there's a
although
lot
I'm of gonna, yeah. I will say for the bedtime, wouldn't you just call him the Sandman?
Yeah, he could be the Sandman.
Between the Iceman and Rizzoli and Smiles, we've got a lot of marketing stuff to really hammer out here the next couple of weeks.
I think Iceman's good.
Iceman's great.
I think put him in a plane.
Iceman.
Perfect.
There we go.
Yeah.
Photoshop his head onto that scene.
Jake Arrieta will be known as Iceman. 312-981-7200. We did it.
We did it.
We did Picnic. We did
what a
all
year,
the
my friend. What a year.
Matt Klein, thank you so much for playing Picnic with us. It was a great experience doing radio with you and putting these together. Pete Zimmerman, Rob Martier, and, of course, our judge, Esmeralda Leon. A great year of giving nicknames. Now let's apply these things as they make their way to the World Series and win it all. I can say that. I'm not Cubs fans.
No, absolutely.
Everyone else gets quiet in here.
And you know what? I'll say it too.
Yeah.
As a diehard Cubs fan, we are going to the World Series, and we are going to win it all. And I don't care what anybody says about me jinxing or cursing anything. It's going to happen.
And it'll be on the shoulders of the Iceman. All right. right, that's going to do it tonight for the download. Patty Vasquez up next here on 720 WGN. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. Tomorrow night, Curtis Mayfield's son, Todd Mayfield, will be in the studio to talk about his dad, his legacy, the music. Also, hip-hop artist Tink, T-I-N-K, Tink, will be here. She's performing at the Ah-Fest in Union Park on Sunday. We will talk with her as well. Lots to do tomorrow night here on The Download.